Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aiken City Council meeting, June 13th, 2011. And we thank everyone that's here. Thank you very much. We always want your input, and you'll have an opportunity to speak on any issue that you'd like. At the appropriate time, just raise your hand, and we'll call on you. You can come to the mic up here, if you would, and just give us your name. That's all you have to do. And depending on how many people we have, we sure want everybody to have a chance to speak. We have a couple of subjects at least, and I'm sure we'll have some speakers on. And if you try to hold your comments to 5 minutes, that would be great. Then we'd be assured that everyone would get a chance to speak. At this time, we'll have council prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance. Most gracious and sovereign God, we come into your presence this evening with praise and gratitude in our hearts for who you are and for the many blessings you have bestowed on our community. You have greatly blessed us. We give thanks for the opportunity to serve on council. We thank you for our citizens who are with us this evening and all of our citizens who so willingly give of their time and talents to serve our city in so many important ways. We also thank the staff who do such a fine job in support of council and working with our citizens as well. Lord, this evening we ask that you would be with us as we discuss the issues before us. Give us guidance and wisdom that we need to make the decisions that are in the best interest of our citizens and our community. For it's in your holy name we pray and give you the honor and the glory. Amen.
Amen.
The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions necessary to the agenda this evening?
Mr. Mayor, at the appropriate time, I'd like to have a little discussion with SCTOT regarding the yellow signs. I'm sure you've not heard enough about that subject, but if we could go one more time, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly. Item 3, under petitions and requests, okay?
And I do have some information I can share with council when we reach that item, Mayor.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? If not, do we have a motion and a second to
move we accept the agenda as revised?
Okay.
Second.
Okay. All in favor? Show of hands. Passes unanimously. Okay. Under minutes, the consideration of the minutes of the regular meeting of May 23rd and June 2nd, 2011. Any discussion?
I would just want to say thanks for a good job on the special meeting regarding redistricting. Those minutes were really well done.
Okay. Anything else?
Mr. Mayor, I move for approval of the minutes as written for the regular meeting and for the special meeting of June 2nd.
All right. I second that, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under old business, item 1, second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to set the millage rate for fiscal year 2011-12.
Mr. Mayor, do we have boards and commissions?
I'm sorry?
Boards and commissions.
Please.
We don't have any appointments tonight for council consideration, Mayor. There is a memo from our city clerk reminding council we do have 5 appointments pending.
Do you want to talk about that? We'll add that to the request.
I thought it was standing agenda. Yes, we would need to add that. I have one appointment I would like to put
all
on
right,
the table.
We'll just
please.
Add that as number 4. How's that?
Is there any objection, Mayor?
We can do it now if you want. Go ahead.
Yes, I would like to council to consider the appointment of Judy Sennett to the Community Development Committee, and I gave the form to the city clerk to have that she filled out for information.
Okay, are there any others necessary? Okay, good. Thanks for bringing that up. Okay, under old business, second reading, public hearing, the ordinance to set the millage rate for fiscal year 2011-2012. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance to provide for the levy of taxes for ordinary city purposes and for capital development purposes in the city of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2011, set the millage therefore at 66 mils and to provide for the expenditures thereof. This is typically what we do with the budget, is set the millage rate that determines our revenue, and that's why it's first in the order of business, Mayor. We reduced the millage rate from 71 mils to 2008, and originally the millage rate was somewhere in the neighborhood of 120 mils. So there is no increase in the millage rate this year, so tax bills would remain the same from the city of Aiken.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing, so if there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. No tax increases or anything. Okay, back to council. Do we have a motion and second?
Mr. Mayor, I move that we adopt this ordinance on the second reading and public hearing to set the millage rate for fiscal year 2011 and 12.
Okay, I'll second it. Any comments? I will say that I think this is the 22nd year that we haven't raised a property tax millage in the city of Aiken. Okay, show of hands, all in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 2 is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance to approve a budget for the fiscal year 2011-2012. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. Of course, council conducted a zero-based budgeting process in the fall and in January of this year, and we have gone through the budgeting process with my department directors, and we have had first reading of the ordinance. The ordinance is an ordinance adopting a budget proposed by the city manager containing estimates of proposed revenues and expenditures by the city of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2011 and ending June 30, 2012, and declaring that the same shall constitute the budget of the city of Aiken for such fiscal year. You have the memo that I provided at first reading. I've had no comments in my office about the budget. We have tried to be very, very fastidious with the taxpayers' money and not make unnecessary expenditures. At the same time, we do have the goals that were adopted by council at our Horizon session in January, as well as our strategic plan, and those comprise the capital items that we singled out in my memo. Of course, we do have a major capital project next year, which is the new well and water plant on Silver Bluff Road. That really accounts for the major difference between this year's and last year's budget. In actual money, we have a decreasing budget, not an increasing budget. It's the project on Silver Bluff that's added to our expenditures this year. We have sufficient funds in reserves to borrow the money to build the plant and then pay that back through the depreciation that we take out on our utility each year. So there's sufficient cash flow, won't endanger our fiscal condition, but it will help get that plant built, and then we just pay ourselves back for constructing the plant. One item that was not in the budget that I did want to bring up tonight, the Atlantic Broadband representative, Sam McGill, who's in the audience today, contacted me, and I've had a conversation with our IT manager and also with our city attorney. For many years, they were able to provide us internet access at no cost. But they have approached us and said that it's now time for them to collect a fee for our internet service. And that fee is going to be $600 per month for 6 months next year. And then it actually then changes to, if I'm not mistaken, it was $1,500 a month for 6 months. And then after that point, it would go to a fee schedule of $3,000 per month. We didn't have it in the budget because these discussions took place after we had gone through the budgeting process. But the total that we would pay next year is $20,700. I've been in contact with our IT division manager, and Gary Smith's also been involved regarding this request from Atlantic Broadband, and he's determined it to be an appropriate request. So as part of adopting the budget, I would ask the council approve the expenditure of $20,700 for internet access service for the city of Aiken. We will pay that out of reserve funds that we have set aside for our IT division for computer use. Yeah, right. So as part of adopting the budget, we would just ask the an amended motion that would allow that expenditure.
The amount again is $20,700.
That's correct. Right. Yes, ma'am.
Right. Okay. This is a second reading public hearing of this issue, and if anyone would like to speak on the budget, you certainly may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
I have a question. You're saying that it is 6 months for $600, then it changes to $1,500. How long is that duration?
That would get us through the next fiscal year. And let me make sure I'm telling you the right figure.
No.
It's $2,250 a month for 6 months. And then, of course, as part of the budget process, we would have the additional two-year terms in the budget process. This all just came about very late in our budgeting process, but we did want to get that in, so we were authorized to make that expenditure and cover that expense.
Another question. I know nothing about providing the services. I guess we're talking about to the entire city.
This is for the city buildings, the city of Aiken operations.
All of the city buildings.
Public safety, parks, recreation, and tourism, the depot, Woodward House.
Wherever they are.
That's right.
Have you considered any alternative? There may not be any.
We have, and quite frankly, we've determined that Atlantic Broadband is making a very fair offer based on the other
best offer
pricing we checked. Yeah.
Okay. And it's 600, and then for 6 months, and then?
I think I said 2,000.
2,000,
2,250.
Right.
So 600 for 6 months.
Right.
Then 2,250 for 6 months.
Right.
Then 3,000.
That's right.
Wow.
How long is the contract?
A three-year term. They proposed a three-year term.
Fixed rates through the duration.
That's right. Fixed rates through the duration.
So the $3,000 would be the fixed rate?
That's correct.
Are the $2,700?
The $3,000 figure would be for the remaining 2 years under the agreement.
Okay.
Yeah. So the total that we would expend next year is $20,700.
Okay. One final question. You know, I've expressed frustration that we can't have our email addresses on our website.
You have?
Because it... of the claims of span, with this kind of money, can we get the service from Atlantic Broadband that would allow us, like other cities, like North Augusta, for example, so the constituents can email us directly?
We can certainly look into that, Mr. DeWar. When we have taken down our firewall, we have gotten as many as 1 million spam email messages in a single day. So, we could certainly look at that. That's something we can do internally. And I do have the IT folks working on a website redesign.
But is that something that is affected by Atlantic Broadband because they're the Internet provider?
No.
It's not?
No. That just gets the messages here, whether it's spam or a legitimate message. They're coming in over the fiber optic.
Okay.
Any other comments? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
We need to, Mr. Mayor, and the city attorney may have to help me, but I move that we amend the budget to include this three-year contract as described by the city manager. So, Mr. City Attorney will have to help.
And to also approve the budget as amended.
All right, both of them then.
Yes.
All right, can you reread what I just said, please? Restate it, please.
You're moving to amend the budget ordinance to authorize the city manager to enter into a contractual arrangement with Atlantic Broadband Cable,
yes,
as described by the city manager, and to approve the budget as presented in the city council agenda package tonight.
Exactly what I said.
I'll second that.
Good job. Okay, any other comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
And again, Mayor, I would like to thank staff publicly for all their hard work, their many hours, and productive conversations they had with me so we could develop this budget.
Absolutely. The new business, first item is the first reading of an ordinance for holding a redistricting referendum. Mr. Pierce, please.
I Mayor, we received the 2010 census figures. We've discussed that in a public hearing on June 2nd, and as a result of our discussion, it was the consensus of council that we present an ordinance tonight. That ordinance reads, an ordinance calling a referendum pursuant to South Carolina Code Section 5-15-30 on the question of whether the method of election for city council should be changed from 4 members elected from a single member district, or elected from single member districts, and 2 members elected at large to 6 members other than the mayor. Just to be clear, but the title says elected at large to 6 members elected from single member districts. I just want to be clear that as part of this ordinance, Mr. Mayor, the intent would be, and it is stated in the ordinance, in fact, under Section 2, regardless of the method of election adopted for the council by the city of Aiken, the mayor shall continue to be elected at large. Council will recall the presentation by Bobby Bowers from the Statistics Division of the Office of Budget and Control from Columbia, who came down and talked about the census, the figures, and the best way, given that the current 421 system would not allow statistically to continue 2 minority districts in the city of Aiken, that a 6-1 system would ensure that the historic 2 minority member districts would be preserved. Jim Holly is here tonight, and he's prepared to address questions council may have, but this is the ordinance that we prepared based upon the discussion we had at the public meeting on June 2nd.
Okay, thank you, sir. Mr. Holly, would you like to say anything, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I don't have anything, I think, additional to say. You did ask that we look at perhaps a schedule, assuming the 6-1 ordinance was approved and the referendum was successful, a potential schedule, and I provided that in the memorandum, part of which has legal discussion in it, but the schedule itself is included in there and is consistent with what I explained at the last meeting, where the November 2011 election, the existing schedule and offices open would be voted on under the 421 plan. And then in November 2013, there'd be an election for districts 2, 4, and 5, and 6. And those would be with the new boundaries. And those would be for 4-year terms. And then 2015, the mayor would be up for election again. And then districts 1 and 3, who were elected, those persons were elected in 2011 under the 421 plan, would go up for election in 2015 under the new 6-1 plan, assuming it's implemented. So it's basically the same as we discussed at the public hearing, I believe. But I have provided that, a memo to that effect, and I think we also have information from Mr. Bowers as to the statistical data that would go along with a sample for, 6-1 plan. I think Mr. Pierce has provided that.
And council does have that as a separate sheet.
Yeah. Jim, for the sake of many who may be here for the first time and not heard this, could you talk about from the beginning for the legalities of this and why we're doing this, yes, why we have to do this every 10 years and that kind of thing?
Yes, sir.
And Jim, added to that, explain what a 4-2-1 and a 6-1 plan,
sure,
is.
Well, if you don't mind, Mr. Mayor, I'll go back to the mid-80s, if I may.
I think that's worthwhile.
Okay. Before approximately 1987, the 6 members of council, other than the mayor, were all elected at large. That meant they could live anywhere in the city, and all the citizens could vote for all 7 positions. Approximately 1987, the city was sued by the United States Department of Justice under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, 1965. It was alleged that because the population of the city was approximately a third African American, and that there had not been, I think in the past, more than one African American member elected city council, that the that minority community was not being rep, did not have an equal opportunity to elect members of its choice to city council. Initially, the Justice Department, and I think the NAACP was also involved in the lawsuit, wanted the city to go to a single-member district system where the six members of council, other than the mayor, would have to live in and run from a specific district. Through negotiations with the Department of Justice, particularly, a compromise was reached and implemented by a court order by a federal judge requiring the city to go to a hybrid system called the 421, which has four single-member districts. The candidates from those four districts must live in that district, and they're only voted on by the residents, qualified electors and residents of that district, and then two members of council elected at large. So it's four single-member districts, two at large, the mayor elected at large, the 421. After the 1990 census, we redistricted those four single-member districts so that they would roughly, under the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution, each have approximately the same number of citizens. That's called one person, one vote. We also had to make sure that the four of the four districts, at least two of them, had that had greater than 50% minority residents and greater than a 50% voting age population. And so that we successfully did that. It was submitted to the Justice Department for preclearance under the Voting Rights Act, under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which is required of almost every southern jurisdiction and many other jurisdictions throughout the country. The Justice Department pre-cleared that, so we continued with the 421 plan. In 2000, after that census, the same issue came up. Because the census, we had to adjust the boundaries of the of whatever districts we had to make sure that they were roughly equivalent in population. After the 2000 census, there was a council was concerned that the Justice Department would not pre-clear the continuation under the Voting Rights Act of the 421 plan because of changes in minority populations in the two minority districts. And council voted to have a referendum on whether the city should change to a 511 plan, which is would created a fifth district, continue to have one member elected at large, and the mayor elected at large. That referendum did not pass, and we council then drew a new 421 plan, which changed the districts, the boundaries of the four single-member districts, to comply with the one-person, one-vote requirement, and also retain the two minority districts as far as minority population and voting age population. And the numbers were in the two minority districts were, the way I would view it, good enough to be pre-cleared by the Justice Department. They were. But it was a close call in my legal opinion back then. But it was pre-cleared by the Justice Department, and that plan was continued until today. As a result of the 2010 census, there have been in the two minority districts, let me rephrase it this way. There's been great growth in District 4, the Woodside and South Aiken area, just tremendous growth there. And therefore, to redistrict or revise the boundaries of the four single-member districts, you have to move populations around, and that results in there being more population in the other three districts, 1, 2, and 3. As a result of that, the minority population numbers in 1 and 2 and come down to the extent that if you just redistrict under the four single-member districts, one of those two districts would not have sufficient minority population or voting age population, in my opinion, to gain preclearance by the Justice Department. They would not pre-clear it. Because in one of those districts, the numbers of minority population and voting age population would fall probably in the low 40s as far as a percentage. 40% population, minority population, 40 or 45% voting age population. The Justice Department likes to see those numbers 55% or more. And there's no way to do that in a 4-to-1 plan with the population numbers that we have now under the 2010 census. So the question most likely would be, what plan does the city change to for election of council members if it agrees with my analysis and Mr. Bauer's analysis that the Justice Department is not going to pre-clear a revised 4-to-1 plan because there would only be one minority district which would have sufficient population numbers to qualify for the Department of Justice standards. That's the predicament the city has, and the way to settle the issue going today and going forward would be to consider going to 6 single member districts, still retaining 2 minority districts, that is 2 districts where the population, the voting age population of the minority population of those districts would exceed 55%. There seems to be no other way to accomplish that. And if council and the voters do decide to go to the 6-1 plan, I would think that would settle the issue for many years to come. The city cannot go to at-large districts. That's not an option under the Voting Rights Act. And it would seem that under the Voting Rights Act, the 6-1 plan is the only viable alternative. Of course, council would decide what the boundaries of those 6 districts are through an ordinance, assuming the referendum passes and assuming council passes an ordinance to call for that election.
Jim, just to be clear, of course, in the proposed referendum, as I recall the discussion on June 2nd, you don't see any legal problem with going forward with the elections in November under the existing 4-2-1 plan since District 4 is not involved in that election. Right. Is that correct?
Yes. As I've told council before, and these are not weasel words, they're reality, there's no way I can guarantee, you know, who might sue or might not sue on what grounds in this complicated area. But in 2000, after the 2000 census, the first election under the new plan wasn't held until 2003. And there was no lawsuits and no criticism from the Justice Department. Under the proposal, if you stay with the 4-2-1 plan for the November 11 elections, districts 1 and 3 are up.
That's right.
And district 1's minority population numbers are still fairly good, and I don't think the Justice Department would be concerned about those. And since District 4 is not up to District 3, I don't know that anybody would have standing to sue as to District 3 under the one person, one vote law. In other words, Mr. Pierce is right. I don't see any significant legal risk to going ahead with the 2011 elections with the existing plan. And obviously, the public knows and the citizens knows that you're in the process of attempting to change that, I assume. And I think any court would take that into account, that you have a complex situation and you have a process in place to change, and you can only change pursuant to legal procedures, and those take time. And you can't change from the 4-2-1 plan to a 6-1 plan without a referendum. Under state law, you have to have the referendum, and we know how important it is, I think, from past results to have that referendum on a general election date so you have a good turnout representation of voters. They historically don't seem to come out with special elections where you just have one issue on the ballot. And you can only have one question on the ballot if you choose to pass an ordinance on the 6-1, and that is, as Mr. Pierce read, do the voters authorize council to change from this system to the other system? That's the only question you can have. If it passes of the referendum, the council would come back and devise the actual 6-1 plan with boundaries and numbers and schedule the election of the implementation of that, which I assume is 2013, in November 2013.
On that point, Jim, based on the conversations and again our public hearing on June 2nd, did I correctly understand that, you know, as you see it, you know, appropriate to go forward with the November 8 election, and then we'll have the, if council passes, of course, the ordinance, we'd have a special referendum question.
Right.
It follows that in 2013, based on the census results we have, we would definitely need to have a plan in place for those elections.
Right. And, you know, there always is the option that that would be the plan, but you always, the council would always have the option, if there is some problem that develops, of advancing that election if council chose to. The 2013. I'm not saying you can or should, but it's just you can, through this process, react to circumstances should they change. And after the 2000 census, there were, nothing happened, and we were able to keep the plan in place. And I would think there's a good chance of that this cycle. But again, if something happens, you have the time and the ability to deal with it. And certainly, if the referendum does pass, then we could have the 6-1 plan, really the 6 single member district plan, devised and up to the Department of Justice for review and comment, you know, shortly after the first of, perhaps the calendar year 2012, if that's what council wants to do. I hope I've made it as simple as I can.
It's not an easy thing necessarily to make simple. No. Dick, you had a question.
Yeah, I have two questions. Number one, we were promised by Mr. Bowers, I believe it was him that made the promise, or maybe the city manager, that we would get a more precise map on the 6-1 district so the people could see the effect of this on themselves.
And you have that. I gave you what I have from Mr. Bowers' office.
Yeah, it just is not as precise. We were talking about something more detailed so that we could see streets and so forth,
right,
see precisely what the boundaries would look like. I mean, this looked reasonable, right, what we were given. Again, I don't know if it's been released to the press, but...
I have given a copy to the media who are in the room tonight. Mr. DeWar, we did make a correction to show the district number. If you'll recall, what Mr. Bauer said is that really it's going to be up to council to adopt a plan. The copy that I've given you today does have the streets on it. You can compare it to the Aiken map, but this is not the plan. This is a drawing that and rendering they did that was the basis for the numbers that I've also given you tonight, showing the 6 single-member districts. So that's all they've done at this point.
Okay.
If so you'll recall, that was just for discussion purposes, and then once the referendum is held, depending on the results of the referendum, then they can develop a
but more specific... based on this, if my constituents ask me, am I going to continue to represent Aiken Estates, I can say no. Am I going to continue to represent the Horse District, I can say no. I mean, that's like the kind of information that I think should be available to the public. And now, everybody understands it won't be precise. I mean,
well, this
we're going to have to deal. Yeah, we're going to have to deal with real numbers. But
right.
Well, if this is all we're given, then I'll draw whatever conclusions I draw from this.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to. I know somebody who spoke last meeting, and she's here in the audience, asked for a more detailed map and an overlay, in fact, of the existing districts with the 6-1, so everybody could see the effects.
I do not have that. Yeah, I do not have that.
And the other question I have, I want to make sure, because you've said that there can only be one item on the agenda, and clearly, and last time, remember, the vote was in April. It was an off-cycle election for the 5-1-1.
Right.
This time, we're proposing to put it in with November,
right,
and so there's going to be two things for the people to vote. Number one, the people in District 1, 3, and maybe the rest of the city are going to vote accordingly for their representative and the mayor. And number two, they're going to be asked to vote for the change in
right
the structure, and that's legal.
Yes,
two items,
yes,
but it meets your one item.
Yes, sir.
It's the referendum question that can only be a single question.
The state law, which authorizes you to put on the ballot, the council to put on the ballot, a change in the method of election says, the law says there can only be one question. That's the question of going from this system, system A to system B.
Okay, and not without regard to the fact that people would be voting for a person for office.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
The city election is still in September, though, right now. We have not changed that date yet.
No, November.
November.
The primaries.
No, no.
You don't mean the primaries or the election?
Primaries. Oh, okay. And traditionally here for the last number of elections, it hasn't been a general election. But if it would happen, it would happen on the November 8th date, correct?
Correct.
Where the primaries were decided ahead of time.
That's right. So if someone is uncontested by state law, then they are declared the winner. There's no need for the general election.
Okay, thank you. But we are saying tonight there will be a general election regardless of whether three existing members have opposition or not. There will be an election on November 8th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that'll be the referendum question. You know, and you'll have that.
For every precinct to be open, right? Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Jim, stay there a minute, and let's see if there are any questions by the audience. This is first reading, of course, and there'll be a second reading coming up, too. But if you'd like to ask any questions or make any comments on first reading, you can do that also. Yes, sir.
I have a question, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir. Come up, if you would, Pat, please.
I can share this with Jeff. How you doing, Jeff?
Pat Paternity, Aiken. First, let me say that I personally like the present 4-2-1 arrangement. I think it gives me and it gives all voters a maximum amount of voting power. I get to vote not only for my councilman for my district, I get to vote for the mayor, and I get to vote for two at large. I appreciate that meeting the scrutiny of the Voters Rights Act that and protecting the incumbents in districts 1 and 2, that the 4-2-1 may not be workable as far as continuing. What I haven't heard to satisfy myself is whether or not the 5-1-1 has been considered. Now, this would be a compromise. I would lose some of my voting power, but I'd still be able to vote for one at large. I'd have 3 votes for city council. To me, when I first thought of redistricting, it seemed logical geographically that the 5th district should be bordered on the west by Lawrence Avenue following the woods down Whiskey Road, on the north Park Avenue, and include the entire southeastern quadrant. It would take a small part of District 1, which would increase the percentage of minority voters in District 1. It would take a small amount out of District 2. It would decrease the size of District 3. And I realize that District 4 would probably have to be further reduced by more than just what it would lose in the southeast quadrant. But to me, this would be a far more logical and workable arrangement, and in my mind, have a better chance of passing in a referendum.
Let's address that. Jim, could you address that? That came up briefly in the discussion, and I don't know whether that, you know, one thing we have talked about is a deviation. We've talked about that you want each area to be the same as much as you can, one person, one vote, but the deviation is also important for the government to vote on. Talk about the 5-1 possibilities. 5-1-1.
Yes, sir. Well, I would have to rely on Mr. Bowers to determine mathematically if it would work under the requirements of the Justice Department and the vote under the Voting Rights Act. You know, with a one person, one vote requirement, certainly you can make it work because you're just looking at the equalizing the populations. It's more complicated with the individual. With the Voting Rights Act, because you're looking at the composition of those populations, at least in 2 of the districts. The city still has a minority population of approximately a third. That's why we're talking about 2 seats of a total of 6. But a 5-1-1 mathematically may work. I don't know that many, if any, cities have gone that route where you know, you just have one elected at large as opposed to more than one because it's, I don't know if they thought, and again, that's a policy decision, what it accomplishes when you just have one of a number of members elected at large rather, and then everybody else elected by districts. Again, that's a policy decision. It mathematically, it might work. It someday, if it were adopted sometime down the road, you might still have to go to a 6-1, possibly.
Yeah, and I think one thing we've discussed is that with the 30% or so population, a minority population in that city, and this is my opinion, I think it would be a shame not to have the two minority districts if that could be worked out. Because we've got 30% minority in our community, and we've worked well over the many years, my goodness, with that kind of representation. And to lose one, I think, would be a shame. You can call it whatever you want to call it, but to me it would be a shame, because it seems like then the 30% minority would lose a seat, and they'd lose representation as well if you only have one district. So I think that's a concern, and I think we all have that concern, whether we can make that work long term or not is something else. But
I think I heard Mr. Bowers opine that he didn't feel the Justice Department liked at-large districts. I think he made that statement.
That's correct. And in most jurisdictions that have dealt with this over time, have gone to single-member districts. I mean, it's the reality, because federal law is superior to state law in this particular area.
But that is the issue of concern of the people. I agree with Mr. Paternetti. It's less of a reduction, but it's still a reduction, even though it might be more acceptable.
Jim, I think we had a discussion. Are you aware of how many cities still have single-member districts? I mean, have like a 421 plan?
They're more than I first thought, but they're some of them don't have minority populations that create the ability to form a district, or have them for other reasons. But they haven't redistricted because they haven't had a change in population to require redistricting to comply with one person, one vote. And if you don't have a redistricting to comply with one person, one vote, there's nothing to send to the Justice Department. So I think because preclearance only applies to changes in voting methods. I don't have a clear answer for you, but there are some that do have what we call mixed systems, but the number is smaller after every census.
Right. In the full essence of ensuring that we have all the information disclosed as much as we can for those who were not present at the last meeting, and Mr. Paternetti, I respect your input very highly. This community has experienced tremendous growth over the last 10 years, and much to our advantage, and particularly on the south side of town. And what has occurred is that every time Woodside specifically experienced growth, the Justice Department would call the minority community, me in particular, Beverly Clyburn, Bill Clyburn, and ask the question, do you see any adverse impact with annexing these areas to the community in terms of voting at all? And in our effort to see this town grow in advance, we would go along with the annexation and the increase in population. That has served us well in terms of our economic base. We've added to our tax base. But what it has done is adversely impacted the districts of which we represent in terms of population, because our community has grown in one area of this town. I will add that I think all of us, as city council members, do not isolate ourselves to just representing our areas. All of us get calls all across this community. So I don't see myself tied to one area, and I think I can speak for the other council members, they don't see that either. So we're fortunate that we have that kind of unity and interest by our council members with all of the community and not just the areas of which each one of us are elected to represent. Thank you.
Any other comments from the citizens? Yes, ma'am.
Ann Dix. In reference to this, I would like for the council to consider maybe 2 or 3 weeks prior to when the general election is to be held, that the information that Mr. Holland presented be published so people can understand. This is where we were. This is how we are now, and this is where we need to go, so that people can understand that it's not change just for change's sake. So when you get closer to that, you know, that would be understood, because just going in and reading the referendum, you know, some people may just say, you know, there's skepticism, you know, about government, that, you know, they're changing just for change's sake. So I would just ask that the council consider that when that comes, gets close to election, that really be publicized and explained why it is necessary for this to occur.
We do have the monthly water bill newsletter, and I would anticipate, depending on what council adopted, we could certainly use that to put that information out.
Yeah. Mr.
Mayor?
Thanks for your comments. That's very, very appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Mayor?
Yes, sir.
Seems like we're kind of dancing around in the dark. We're going to have to wind up with a 6-1. That's the only way we're going to pass the Department of Justice muster as far as getting the district. I think it's incumbent on us and all the people in the city, just kind of like what we did with the penny sales tax, you know, go out and explain every opportunity you have. Go in front of the civic groups and, you know, write letters and do whatever you can to make sure that the people understand it. I know there's a natural reluctance when you go into the voting booth and there's a resolution. Yeah, I don't want to change and, you know, no, mm-hmm. without reading it and so forth. So it's kind of incumbent upon us, because no matter what we do, we can go 115, we can go 421, guaranteed we're going to wind up, the only thing that's going to get approved is a 6-1 by the Department of Justice. And I think what Ms. Hicks said is probably true. We need to go out and lobby for it as long as we agree. And I think we all kind of agree, you know, it's the only solution we have.
Well, I don't agree. And I think Mr. Bowers indicated that, first of all, let me say I agree with putting it on the referendum. I always agree with getting input from the people, but just because we vote to put it on the referendum, Mr. Paninetti's point is not casual. People are going to lose their voting power from 4 out of 7 to 2 out of 7, and that's significant. And they need to take that into consideration as well. I agree with Mrs. Dix that we should publicize the information so that when everybody goes into the voting booth, they understand what they're voting for, and they understand the meaning of it, and they understand the impact of it. There's no question about that. But I don't agree that it's a 6-1 is inevitable. I think it's up to the people, number one. And if they don't, Mr. Bowers has indicated we'll make the best of what we can out of the 4-2-1. And if that doesn't work, then the Justice Department can dictate how we'll run. Whatever the rules are, I can't presume to say what the Justice Department is. But
I would rather the Justice Department not dictate.
Well, I would too. I'd rather the people of Aiken decide what our structure is going to be.
Well, I think probably Leslie and Beverly can could speak to this issue better than any of us. But I remember what we went through before with the suit that we had, and I too think that a six one is inevitable. It's going to come. It's just a matter of when. And it will give us, obviously, the two minority districts. And with 30% population, I don't think the Justice Department is going to sit on their hands and say, no, one minority district is enough. Just based on what I've seen, what little, I've seen of it and being somewhat of a part of it back then. And I don't know if Jim feels the same way or whether Beverly and Leslie want to speak to that, but you've already heard Leslie say that they call on every annexation. So I think it's inevitable. I'm not saying it won't work this next election, because I think it does too want to work this time. But whether it work in 13 or not, I got my doubts.
Mr. Jim, Mayor, I mean, I think
go ahead. You got anything else?
I would agree with your observations on the limited life expectancy of the 421 plan because of the application of federal law and federal regulations and how those are applied by the Justice Department. And one mechanism the Justice Department uses to obtain compliance, of course, is has been mentioned here, is to stop pre-clearing residential annexations. And that's happened to one South Carolina city that then changed its method of election.
And they went to single-member districts.
It's just, it's the reality of having to deal with this particular law and regulatory scheme. There are several pressure points, and one of them is not to pre-clear annexations if the Justice Department is concerned about an issue.
And certainly that could have happened if we had said, no, we have some issues with the properties being annexed in the areas where there's an overpopulation, where the Justice Department would have intervened. But having the city's best interest at heart, we didn't look at the next election in terms of whether that would impact the future of representation on council, but rather the growth of the city and what was best for the city. And if I can paraphrase my colleague Beverly at the last meeting when this came up, in terms of Beverly, correct me if I'm incorrect here, with penalties, we didn't realize that there may be penalties for this without having approved the proposed annexation that was coming before us. So, am I paraphrasing you correctly or incorrectly?
I think one thing on the annexations, and statistically we're going to get further and further off, and we already are in the last year, and we've just approved another small annexation a time back. And I asked Mr. Bauer after the meeting, I said, as we go through history, times are going to change. And so I think there's one thing, as we continue to grow in the city, that our percentages are going to change just because of human nature. We're going to have other non-whites, non-blacks as minorities show up, and those numbers are beginning to increase. Mm-hmm. So I think it's wise for us to continue to look for the future and see how we can manage as we go through. So I think looking at the annexations is very important as we go through the next number of decades, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, but I asked that same question. Data from the census for the 2010 census is frozen in time, and that's the only thing you can use for the next 10 years, regardless of what happens, annexation, population growth, or anything. You're restricted to what the data is for 2010. Now, 2020, if we're still around, we'll worry about 2020, but until then, we have to abide purely by the data that was given to us at the 2010 census.
That was not my point. My point was that the things we're annexing now and what we do in the next 10 years or 20 years, the numbers get skewed even further away. So, you're going to look at a 6-1, and at some point that won't even work. And, we're getting there every year, and in 2010, I think that's going to show that. I always see the numbers. So we live with what we got for 10 years, but following up on what Leslie has said, I think we need to be aware of our annexations in the next 10 years, what they do to the voting. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we can overlook that as we go through time, because in 2020, it's going to show up.
Well, I think if you go 6-1 or eventually maybe
8-1, 7-1, or 10-1, the growth, that gives you the most flexibility in making sure that you keep whatever districts, you know, you want to keep intact, you know, because you're all individuals. You don't have an overlying at-large seat, which could skew the power balance or whatever you want to call it, the representation. So without, if we go 6-1 now, 20 years from now, it'll be 9-1 or 8-1, but it'll be manageable. But we couldn't go back to a 6-3-1 or anything like that.
Yeah. And not advocating that at all.
Way. So I think maybe a 6-1 is probably the solution.
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
May I chime in here for just a minute?
Sure.
I don't know how many of us realize that, and it was brought up at the meeting on June 2nd, that there are states that do not have to go through this process. Not all 50 states go through this process. And the reason we are having to go through the process with the Justice Department has to do with our political, and I don't know if behavior is the word, in years past. And they have found it necessary that they must continue to look at us to the point where if a person applies for annexation and the annexation is denied, we get a call wanting to know whether this was a minority application or just what the application was and why is it we voted it down, if it was. Whenever we vote in the affirmative for annexation, I mean, this last time when we annexed the last phase, I'll tell you, I felt a little pressure from the person that I spoke with who indicated to me that, you know, surely you know that this is diluting your strength and your possibility of being reelected because you're bringing in all these people that in a neighborhood that does not fit the economic status of the people who typically would be going there. And so we know that. But when I sit here and I get an annexation request, that's not what's on my mind. What I'm looking at is, does this piece of property warrant coming into the city? Sometimes all they want is water and sewer. And it is not for me to look 4 years ahead and say, well, I can't vote this in because this is going to hurt me later on. I have to look at that individual who's struggling and who's trying to come into the city. And that's what we do. We don't look at what it's going to do to us later on. We look at what that individual and what that property owner wants to do with that property. You can't not do that. You have to look at that if you're going to be sincere in your role as a city council member. And my thing to you is that we have to get to the point where the Justice Department lightens up on us a little bit. We just have to do the right thing. We've tried the 511 and it failed. The people did not want it. They may indeed not want the 6-1. And then we become at the mercy of people who don't live around us telling us what we need to do. And I don't know what we can do about that. It'll be some judge or some edict from Washington telling us what program we are going to have, provided we don't get a suit out of this. And so I think we ought to go ahead and do the right thing. We ought to just go ahead and do it and get it over with. We've been at large since I moved to Aiken up until 73. In 88, when I got elected, Fred and I came in as the first persons under the 421. He from District 3 and I from District 1. And that's been a long time ago, 23 years. And we're still fighting this battle. And I think we need to go ahead and come up with a plan that's going to work no matter what the census is in 2010. We can still have a 6-1, but maybe we'll have a 25% population or 20% population, but we'll deal with that in the next 10 years. But I think if we go to 6-1, it might be that we don't have to spend money on a lawsuit, hiring additional attorneys. And if we care about the taxpayers' money, we ought to go ahead and do the right thing. And the right thing is not that as an individual you seek more power. Because no matter who's sitting here, we have how many votes each? One. And we don't vote by where we are, where we live. We're going to vote based on whether it merits coming into the city or whether what's happening merits being approved. And I certainly don't get what these guys and decide. I read it. I read what's given to us. And I do it on individual merits. We are going to make decisions tonight whether we are going to purchase a piece of property in Hitchcock Woods. That's not in my district. And I doubt that it's any other person's district other than one person. Is that your district, Mr. Duong?
Well, it's not in anybody's district, but yeah, the land is in my district.
The land is in your district. And so it doesn't matter to me that I'm going to vote to purchase a piece of property that's not in District 1. But we have to look at what is it going to benefit the city and you as a resident as a whole. And that's what we do. It's usually not based on the color of our skin or the sex of the person making the vote. It's based on what's best for the citizens of the city. And that's what we have to keep in mind. And I don't know that you want someone else telling you how to divvy up your council members, because that's what's going to happen if we're not careful and if we don't do the right thing. Thank you.
Very good. Any other comments? You know, this is kind of one of those good bad situations. We've had a lot of annexations. Just think what the city would be like if Woodside had not been annexed into the city, mm-hmm. and what a difference Woodside has made to the value, the quality, the folks. They work hard. They help in all kinds of things, and. I don't see that happening. There may be some annexations that we would turn down, but we haven't turned down many. Mm-hmm. And I think our city is a better place because of that. And we grow not a whole lot. We grow 1.6 per year, 1%. That's not a bad growth. We need growth. We've been able to keep our property taxes down. That's been a part of that, certainly. So without further ado, if there are no other comments, are there any other comments?
Well, just one point.
Okay. I want you to read.
The current system allows an individual to vote for their district and two at large and then the mayor. That's basically four votes. But in fact, it's everybody is going to have the same opportunity under the 6-1. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to have basically two representatives, the mayor and their district. So it's not like somebody is losing. You lose the number of people that might represent you, but in fact, everybody's going to have the same opportunity. So as long as the opportunity is the same, I don't see any problem with that.
Right.
Mr. Mayor, I just want to make one other point. I think most people know that my husband is in the state legislature. There are 124 members in the House. And if you've ever been to my house when I get the mail, we get letters from Dorchester County. He gets letters from Greenville County. People don't care where you live when they are trying to get you to support their point of view. I got a letter from a lady from North Augusta, and she called after she sent the letter. And, you know, I said, have you talked to the person that represents your area? And she said, I have, but I'm writing everybody because he's just one vote. you realize that in Columbia, 124 people sits there and makes and votes, and they vote all on the same item. Then it goes to the Senate, and they have to vote on it. And all we're saying to you, all I'm saying to you is that you have the same power. All you have to do is call us all and write us all. We'll talk about it and make a good decision for you. That's usually what we do. And that's why we get recognized so much. It's because we're a good city. We work together. And it's not personal. I get a year older every year, like so many of you. And I may not be sitting here next time. But whoever sits here, I'm sure, will do a good job. So it's not about me, and it's not about Leslie. It's about good representation and working together. That's what we do.
Beverly, I think you mentioned it. I think if we ask everyone here, have you ever turned down a phone call because it was out of your district?
Mm-mm.
We would have all no's. I know of so many situations that all of us have been through where we've helped. We've gone to see what the problem was. I used to get calls from the detention center.
Me too.
Not enough blankets when it's cold weather, not enough food. And I would call someone and say, hey, I just got this call. Would you look into this, please? And so, and I think our citizens understand that. We've had a very good working relationship. And we're still small enough to be able to do that in our city. We're no large metropolitan area that maybe it's harder to do that. But anyway, without going any further, could we get our city manager to read the ordinance title again?
Yes, sir.
And then we're going to call for a vote.
The title is an ordinance calling a referendum pursuant to South Carolina Code Section 5-15-30 on the question of whether the method of election for city council should be changed from 4 members elected from single-member districts and 2 members elected at large to 6 members elected from single-member districts.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
I so move.
I second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? Any more discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously on first reading. There will be a second reading at our next meeting.
That'll be June 27th, Mayor.
Okay. Item 2 under new business, first reading of an ordinance to modify the annexation and site plan for 2352 Whiskey Road, the proposed Cracker Barrel site. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. This ordinance is entitled an ordinance to amend ordinance 12132010 to delete the annexation of 0.35 acre at 2352 Whiskey Road and modify the concept plan to omit this tract. Council will recall that Murray Brothers came before you back in December for a site on Whiskey Road. That ordinance is in the agenda packet that we provided you. That was an annexation and a zoning of the commercial to PC plan commercial. As part of the concept plan that council adopted, there was a 0.35 acre tract. And as you look at Whiskey Road, it was in the upper right-hand corner. That was a portion of land owned by the Gabriel family. After this process through, it appeared that the Murray brothers were going to lease the 0.35 acres, not purchase it, and the use for the tract was for additional parking only. I had a conversation with Larry Morris and with Planning Department Director Ed Evans. As part of the development, this track really was kind of extra. It wasn't anything that was needed for the particular proposed development or for the property to be zoned plan commercial. Since the Murray brothers were not going to own the track, they were merely going to lease it under our zoning ordinance. We weren't able to annex it because the person proposing the annex was not an owner, just a leasehold interest holder. So that's why we've come before you today for this project to proceed is just to modify that ordinance to delete the requirement of annexing the 0.35-acre tract.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have... Yes.
Why was this request made? What is on this property that it should be excluded?
Well, there's nothing on the property. The tract was proposed to be developed. This isn't where the building was going to be. This was going to be just extra parking that
this
was in the
billboard.
This is not the billboard. No. Now, the billboard is still going to be removed.
Okay, do we have a motion and second?
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve on first reading an ordinance to amend ordinance 12132010 to delete the annexation of 35 acres at 2532 Whiskey Road and modify the concept plan to omit this track.
I'll second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, very good. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 3, first reading of an ordinance to sell 7,480 square feet to Murray Brothers Land Development, LLC. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The ordinance is an ordinance approving the sale and conveyance of a portion of the property owned by the City of Aiken, located on Oak Grove Road and Athol Avenue, to Murray Brothers Land Development, LLC. Pursuant to the development plan and the survey that was provided to council, there is a small strip of land along Oak Grove that the City of Aiken was going to convey. That was 700 square feet, and then along Athol Avenue was 6,780 square feet. Council will recall back in December when we passed the annexation and development ordinance, it was discussed that this land would be conveyed, and in even prior meetings we talked about a pro rata calculation for the purchase. So based on the money that the city expended to purchase the land along Athol and the land on Oak Grove, which was the ARC, we bought the Athol Avenue property from the George family. This represents the pro rata cost for that area of land, and that was calculated by the surveyor and verified by our engineering and utilities department director, Larry Morris. So for council approval is the sale. This is first reading. Since it's a sale of city-owned land, we do have to do that by ordinance, so we will have to have a second reading and public hearing on June 27th. This is for first reading approval.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
We have a second. Any discussion?
Just a question. How is the price of $38,850.10 arrived at?
Again, that was a pro rata calculation based upon the money that we spent to buy the total tracts we bought. Right.
Okay.
We just converted that to a square footage.
Okay, thank you.
And
we're getting that money back.
we're getting that money back.
And some of it.
Okay, is that it? Is there any more comment on that issue? I can't tell. I guess not. Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Sorry, who seconded the motion, Mayor?
I did.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Okay, all in favor of approval, show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. Item 4, resolution to purchase 32.65 acres near Hitchcock Woods.
Mayor, if I may, yes. There was a separate ordinance that was contained in your packet. In addition to selling the square footage of land, since Athol Avenue does run across the square footage that we're selling, there's also an ordinance on first reading to abandon the right-of-way of Athol Avenue.
Was that part of the past?
It was in that packet. There's two separate ordinances.
Oh.
It was not listed on your agenda list, but it is in your packet and was advertised.
Page 107.
Right, it's on page 107. That's for first reading approval, and that's to abandon the Athol Avenue right-of-way that is contained within that 7,480 square foot area. We're going to move Athol Avenue as part of developing the infrastructure of the tract. So we would need a motion and second to approve the abandonment of that right of way.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, now number four. Resolution to purchase 32.65 acres near Hitchcock Woods, also known as Peggy's Pond. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a resolution authorizing the purchase of 32.65 acres of real property located near the city of Aiken, known as Peggy's Pond. This land is actually owned by Hams Lake Corporation, and we've been approached by Peggy Penland, who's the president of Hams Lake Corporation, and offered the 32.65 acres for $118,000. Larry Morris has reviewed the tract. He's reviewed the paperwork and the appraisal, and we do have funds available in our 1 cent sales tax to purchase this property. Council will recall, and you should have a copy of an email in your agenda items from Gene Eisen, who's the director of Institute for Applied Ecology and is the director of the Baruch Institute of Coastal Ecology and Forest Science at Clemson University, who worked with us on the Green Infrastructure Project. And in after we've completed the Green Infrastructure Project and abated the stormwater runoff, we're looking at remediation of Hitchcock Woods, and council is aware that we do have money in the 1 cent sales tax to cover a portion of those remediation costs. In the email that you received from Dr. Eisen, he does talk about how that this property will help in those treatment measures as well as potential other uses for this tract of land. Larry Morse has reviewed all this and considers it appropriate to purchase this tract of land, and for council consideration, this is a resolution, so you only hear this one time. Based on the decision tonight, that's how staff will proceed, and that is approval of the resolution for us to acquire the 32.65 acres from Hams Lake Corporation.
Okay, thank you. Larry, do you have anything to add on this issue that you'd like to add? Anyone have any questions of Larry?
Yes, and Larry and I have discussed this over the years. My concern is it's right by an old blowdown station that's still active, and in over the history, these guys used to just blow the heavy metals and everything into the water. And I think the last purchase of this was in 1976, and the EPA and the Stormwater Act were just beginning to come in. Is there any chance of heavy metals out there or other environmental things that we need to investigate or be sure that they pass to us indemnified?
I don't think we've got any problems with that, Mr. Ebner, and the biggest reason why is the property is located adjacent to the old Aiken wastewater treatment facility, and of course we have not had a lot of heavy industry. Certainly we have had our share of auto repair places where you would get some heavy metals that way, but metals tend to concentrate in sludge, and since it was a complete treatment plant there with a trickling filter, and the sludge was applied to drying beds and then hauled off, the liquid that was going out would not have been, shall we say, hot, so to speak, with heavy metals. My experience with wastewater treatment plants that I've run and managed before was that most of the metals were concentrated in the sludge.
Well, how about the, it's a transfer station there and blowdown station that's operated by an oil company. And years ago, they weren't as cautious as the cities were about dumping their sludge, you know, blowing it into the water.
That is for the, I think that's Carolina Gas Transmission. It is gas. It is not oil. To my knowledge, there's not a lot of sludge with gas. There could be. I'm not a gas expert. But from what I have seen of the operation there and also the operation down there, which is adjacent to Coal Creek, I haven't seen, you know, areas that would have tailings or sludge ponds adjacent to them.
Yeah, because the other place is a compressor station, and typically when you compress gas, stuff comes out of it. The other thing, it may be Mr. Morris or somebody, Dr. Edson, in his memo, makes a good case for this to be a Hitchcock Wood, part of Hitchcock Woods and not part of the city. And it is adjacent to them. And there is money in local option sales tax for and using some of his words, you know, the safe sediment storage and enhance the wildlife of that. So I would just, my question is, has this been studied by Hitchcock or our open space committees to see, would this be better owned by Hitchcock Woods and let them maintain this as part of their walking trails and others rather than the city? You know, the money would come from local option sales tax either way.
It would. This track, though, is actually across the road from Hitchcock Woods.
Well, it's still adjacent.
Well,
I mean, and accessible.
It is, and again, since it was adjacent to a former wastewater treatment facility that the city had, it was just seen that the reason we were interested in it was to help us with the remediation and a potential use as a either green space or passive park with a environmental component to it at some point in time.
Well, typically if the EPA or the stormwater people come after a group, they come after the group with the deep pockets, and the city has deep pockets and Hitchcock Woods wouldn't. You know, that's my experience from the industrial world.
Well,
so that's why I bring up the point, would it be better managed by Hitchcock Woods as part of their 2,000 plus acres?
I would hope before we would buy a piece of property that we would know what's there and what might EPA come after.
Yeah.
I mean, and what's the history and what might come in the future that EPA would come after? But I think we ought to know that.
But nothing happens until you disturb it, right, Mr. Morris?
That
as long
is
as you don't disturb the surface and everything sits there and nobody plays with it, you can sit there to eternity. But if you ever put a spade in the ground, boy, they get all over you in a hurry.
Much of this area is wetlands and would remain as such. And, of course, Dr. Eitzen is in the audience with us tonight and is an expert on wetlands and remediation. So I would have to...
Sure. You know. And we'd like to hear from him if he'd like to make some comments. Yeah.
Certainly, ma'am. If I could just point out for information as well that Doug Raybould, who's the director of the Woods Foundation, is with us here tonight as well.
Right.
And actually, you know, we've been approached by the Woods Foundation to see whether the city would have interest in purchasing the property. So he can speak to why.
I think that would be good. And,
right.
And I'm not against doing it, but I want to be sure the right entity is working with it. And Hitchcock Woods has done a marvelous job over the years of maintaining that for the city and goodness for tourism and everything. So,
well, Doug, would you speak to that point if you have any thoughts on it, the interest that Hitchcock Woods Foundation might have there? And then if Dr. Eitzen has some comments that he'd like to make, we'd love to have him make those comments.
Thank you. Doug Raybould, Executive Director of Hitchcock Woods Foundation. I don't speak on behalf of the board. We have at least one member of the board here this evening. I can say a few things, though, that might shed some light. The area in question is not contiguous with the Hitchcock Woods. It's across a road from the woods, and it is actually separated by other property that is also privately owned, the stable on the woods, which we do not own. We do not own the parking lot where people enjoy the Hitchcock Woods when they enter at that location. The land that the foundation manages is done so for the purpose of recreational use. In 2008, there was a series of meetings among members of City of Aiken staff, City Council, representation from Aiken County, South Carolina DNR, South Carolina DHEC, and US EPA Region 4, as well as the Hitchcock Woods Foundation. Those meetings, which took place from January through October, were used to generate a series of ideas among all of the participants in the room. Those meetings were facilitated or arbitrated, however one would like to view it, by Clemson University representatives having been hired by the City of Aiken to do so. At that time, Peggy's Pond, as it's been called, has been mentioned many times as a place for the City of Aiken to take advantage of that resource to address stormwater issues that it has, and those stormwater issues affect Hitchcock Woods. And the intent was to use this resource from an ecological standpoint to address stormwater. The Hitchcock Woods Foundation isn't in the business of managing stormwater, so we therefore would not be interested in managing a resource intended for that purpose.
Okay. Doug, thank you.
I've got a question for the city attorney. In other words, the Hitchcock property is on one side of the street, and this property is on the other side.
That is correct.
But it's so legally it's contiguous. That's what we've said.
Legally, for purposes of ascertaining whether or not the city can annex property, a road, if it's just across the street, the road will not interfere with contiguity. That's different from being a property owner and do I want to own this property and do I want to own property across the street. That's an entirely different analysis.
So there's privately owned land between Hitchcock Woods.
As I read the packet, this part of this property, just before it turns on Westcliff, is directly across from the Hitchcock Woods.
It is.
So part of this is directly contiguous. Part of it is behind privately owned land and really not contiguous. But there is a portion of it.
I was looking through the package. I didn't actually see a survey.
It was hard to see. It was hard to see because you had to look at the parcel number to figure out where it is, and it's a good sized parcel. But there is a portion that is directly across from Hitchcock Woods, just as you get to Westcliff. As I read it, it was a difficult item to read. I got to say that.
Yeah, that's what my question was based on.
Yes, sir.
But I think the point's well taken that we've got some options on where the money should come from.
Yes, we do.
And we might want to look at that.
Thank you. My name's Gene Eitzen. I'm a citizen of Aiken and a professor at Clemson University. I've been involved with Sand River restoration and the green infrastructure. The concern I had about Peggy's Pond was the ability to have more flexibility in the way that we would address restoration of Sand River. We have to have a receptor site for the sand that has migrated from the canyon. Right now, much of that sand is in Cathedral Isle. If the city owned Peggy's Pond, you would have the ability to flush that sand into that area as an alternative that you would not have if you did not own that property. The other alternative is you might use it as a separate auxiliary stormwater management area. You could pipe stormwater directly to Peggy's Pond versus going through Hitchcock Woods to alleviate some of the problem in Sand River that you have right now. So from an ecological perspective, it has importance from a green infrastructure. There is an interconnection. It provides a wildlife corridor. It is a valuable piece of property from that standpoint. But more importantly, from the perspective of the restoration, it provides more flexibility than you would have trying to restore Hitchcock Woods alone without that piece of property.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Dr. Eitzen, thank you.
Appreciate the email.
Larry, I'd like to ask you a question. For many, many months and probably years, there's been discussion of what's going on there because the water builds up at that bridge over Dibble Road. We've talked about it and tried to get DOT to do something about looking into it, what have you. And presumably there's a buildup on the other side, perhaps it's beavers or whatever. If we buy that land, we can clarify that. We can dredge that out or do whatever we need to so that that water will flow. Right now, as you know, on a heavy rain, it doesn't necessarily come over the road, but it's very close. But what's happening is, in my opinion, is where the pavement goes up to the bridge, and it's already lowering. The pavement is lowering, and there's a big bump there every time you go over it. And I've been talking to you and Richard about that, and you've been trying to get DOT to come in and do something about it, and it's only getting worse. And I wonder what's happening to the foundation of that bridge, because that water is there. Now, why should the water be there other than there's some kind of a dam on the other side? Could you discuss this issue a minute? I'm very interested in getting something done there, you know, whether we would buy the property or not.
Certainly. And
Mayor, if I may, we did have confirmation from SCDOT that they would have a crew there this week to handle the bump. And I think we have permission from the current owner for access to see if there is a beaver dam located up or downstream.
Okay, we've been after them since March, thereabouts.
It took us
and maybe
3 months.
Even longer. Maybe you've been after them more than that.
It seems like an eternity.
I did talk to Ms. Peggy Penland today, and Peggy is here with us tonight also, and she's very amenable to having them enter her property and look for beaver dams, look for other problems. And the promise that I have from DOT is that they will go look. They don't have their beaver trapper available, but they do have personnel available that if they do find something, they can remove a dam. That bridge historically has been one that could possibly flood. I remember in the early 1990s, we had a major storm in the area, and Peter Gray called me down there. And Peter and I looked at the bridge, and there's water actually jumping up through the bridge structure itself, even at that time. So that bridge historically has been a problem. We've worked with the various maintenance engineers for the Highway Department District to try to keep the water open and flowing through there. The problem right now is that the channel is open going underneath the bypass where it goes, but somewhere in that tangled mass of vegetation is where the blockage is. We have had problems with beavers before. We hope that's what we find this time. As far as what we do with the area, as Dr. Eitzen alluded to, that we would be working with EPA, we'd be working with the Corps of Engineers to make it a site that would be one that would help us with the restoration of the woods.
Right.
And EPA certainly has been in on the ground floor of that, in the discussions with it. If you look at what we, one of our neighbor cities, Orangeburg, has done with an area like that, this would be one that very simply could become a very, very much of a beautiful area of Aiken, especially if we could install some walkway bridges around it, with wooden walkways, just to be able to have a wetlands view in there. We do have some area there that could be used for parking. The area is bounded, again, by our old treatment plant site. It's bounded by Cumberland Village, and it can be accessed from the bypass. So it is a very valuable area for us that would give us some extremely good green space with more than one purpose. If you look at what we did back in the early 90s with Hopelands, where we took a tangled briar patch, and look what we have now. And although we wouldn't do something that drastic in an area that large, I think certainly it's something that we could do and have not only stormwater abatement and some work that we could do for the woods to get the sand out of the woods, which would help restore it, but it would give us somewhere that our citizens would enjoy.
Very good. Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Mayor, I have a comment to ask Larry, our statement. You shared with us a number of benefits of having us purchasing this tract of land, and let me just add that I support this. I think that based on what you've shared and what I've read, that this would be of an advantage, but I need to hear from you whether you feel that environmentally we're free from problems environmentally on that property. And secondly, I do think that we're going to end up having to make some investments beyond the purchase price to make this attractive for the community. Is pleased that this is some good green space that the families can enjoy. But the concern that I have is environmental concerns. Do you feel that we're inheriting some concerns, or you feel that we're free from that?
I really don't feel that we're inheriting any concerns. And part of what Mr. Ebner said a while ago is very true. And if you think about a few months back in the newspaper, the EPA has now started looking at the pond below there where Bobby's Barbecue backs up to it in that area, that the sediments that did come from the finishing plants and got into that, now the metals and everything are trapped in those sediments, and they're not going anywhere now. I feel that with this wetlands area, we did not have that type of heavy industry discharging to it. You do not see any real problems down there of stunted vegetation. That's one thing that I would look for if I was looking for an environmental problem. I would look for an area, as I was stating a while ago, of a tailings pond or something like that, where such as the blowdown from the gas works would be, where they would have to try to collect something to hold it. There's no real evidence of that. SCE&G recently installed a power line across that area, and where they went through was very viable. Plant life was very healthy. So I just don't have a lot of concern with it. And part of the restoration, I agree with you very much, is that we will be spending some money there, mm-hmm. because we do need it to help restore Hitchcock Woods. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, again, part of that restoration work is we do have funding for that in our 1 cent sales tax. As a part of that, we can beautify it some. We can do some things with it that make it a dual-purpose facility. Right now, if you go into the Cumberland Village area, one of the streets of Cumberland Village parallels that property, and it's pretty much of a jungle down through there. I like to hike, mm-hmm. love to hike. One of the places that I like to hike is Hunting Island. And if you go into some of the areas on Hunting Island and hike, you will find this type of facility there on Hunting Island. Hmm. They've even made bogs down there for freshwater alligators being. I'm not saying we want to do that now, but there are a lot of opportunities we would have here.
Okay. I have a few questions. The appraisal, obviously, I think you might have expected that question for me. Did you consider getting another appraisal?
Normally we do work on just one appraisal now, the county's appraisal of the property.
And every time I'm critical about that.
Right. The county's appraisal of the property is within about 10% of what this appraisal is for it. Certainly we can get another appraisal if council wants us to do that. I have talked with a local appraiser, and should council want another appraiser, he would be happy to work with us on that property.
Well, it's just me, and I guess I'm probably the minority of one on the council, but I'd always prefer to have a couple of appraisals. Can this purchase be conditioned? In other words, if we buy this property and we find that it's an environmental disaster that's going to require an extraordinary amount of money to repair, can we hold a seller liable for that?
That's a legal issue I'd have to turn over to Mr. Smith.
I'm not prepared to answer that question tonight.
Because, I generally have concerns with Mr. Ebner's comment. I'm not sure we know what is in there. I'm hearing you say we're going to make an inspection. So I guess based on that, I guess we're not going to be asked to approve the purchase tonight.
I think whatever would be dispersed in there would have probably come from our wastewater facility.
Which, according to EPA regulations, according to EPA regulations, we're on the hook anyway, because it would have come from our treatment plant.
To really answer that question, you're talking about, I'm not sure how much that environmental report would cost, but it would be an enormous expense.
Yes, what I'm talking about would be another appraisal, not an environmental report.
Report would not be necessary until you start going out there and digging around.
Right.
And the first thing you're going to have to get is an environmental study on what you're fixing to disturb. And so that's where your issue comes in the future. If you never touch the land, then it's great. But if you ever dig into it and you find something, then the digger, and this is that contractor that covered up that sludge out here somewhere in the valley, was just in the newspaper, and he got hit pretty hard for trying to hide the sludge.
Yeah.
So, but that was my concern, what we do with it in the future.
one thing about it that Dr.
I wouldn't do an environmental impact study, no. Gosh, it'd be for years.
That's too long.
One thing that Dr. Eidson did state, though, that this would be a receptor for sand from Sand River. So instead of removing soil, we would actually use it as an accretion area for the sand there. And as the sand came through there and built up, all we have to do is make sure we still get the water through and not have a problem with the Dibble Road Bridge.
Go back to my first comment. It just seems like this ought to be, even if Hitchcock Woods doesn't want to manage the property, this is part of the storm water mitigation out of Sand River that we need to do. So I would still think that money ought to be coming out of that part of local option. It's still local option sales tax. But I think that it would be good for us to continue this to the next time and look at these couple little issues and, let Mr. Pierce, you, and maybe talk with Hitchcock Woods and Dr. Eisen. Is this an appropriate place to get the money from to do it? Because obviously moving the sand would come out of Hitchcock Woods' local option sales tax money.
That would be part of the remediation.
Yeah, I don't think Hitchcock Woods is part of it. I think that's been made very clear. But the pot of money that purchases it, I think, is what you're getting at.
Well, and both cases.
Folks. And I agree. We need to take a look because you're asking us in the packet tonight to use open space money to buy it. And I think most of us would agree that that's not the right kitty. It ought to be from the remediation fund, or some of us might feel that way.
I mean, and to the extent that that's how council votes, we can. The money is available.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the money's available.
I think we just said in here that it was available from the sales tax money.
I would also say it. I had great difficulty with the layout that was in the packet. I drove by there. I looked at it. I finally figured out where the property was, but. Boy, we're not engineers. You got to give us something a little better. I think I could. I still can't see how it's contiguous to Cumberland. I wanted to look at that. I drove through Cumberland and I just guessed that it was on the other side of the houses. But oftentimes we get an aerial shot that's quite clear. The parking lot that we're going to consider pretty soon, we've got an aerial shot. We can see that very clearly. This was really hard to see.
Yeah. And that's a creature of the copying equipment that we have, and certainly we can get the GIS aerial photo if that would help council. If there's other information that council would desire, we could certainly do council's bidding and bring that back to you on the 27th. That's not a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I echo what Reggie's saying, and that is that we ought to take a look at the best source of funding for this. I think I'm sensing that council is going to approve to buy it. I'll probably vote against it because I just don't like buying property with one appraisal. And I will continue to. I wish council would adopt a policy to require two appraisals. I just don't know why we don't. Although we're not spending as much money this time, I support the purchase of it. There's no question about it. I think Dr. Eidson's email almost mandates that we buy it. And I think we've got some more people in the audience may add to that, to the need to purchase it. But I'd like to make sure that we use the right pot of money to make the purchase.
Mr. Mayor, a question.
Yes. Uh-huh.
We mentioned the 1 cent sales tax and using 1 cent sales tax funds as an option. Can we use those funds without the voters approving that out of that bucket? I thought we had listed those items the voters approved to fund. And do we have that discretionary pot to pull from that we can pull money and use this this?
It would not be discretionary money. It would be related to the Hitchcock Woods remediation project.
Okay.
Yeah, that is
so that's set the tie.
Out of sales tax.
Yeah. Or the open space
or
fund.
Open space fund.
I'd prefer the remediation, quite frankly. Yeah.
I think the information we received today, there's certainly a connection that would be appropriate to use the money for. Because, mm-hmm. The citizens have voted on that.
I got a question. I noticed in the appraisal some of the portion of the 32 acre or 32 plus acres is identified as buildable. If our intention is not to build on it, shouldn't we get another appraisal where the building is foreclosed? Consequently, it should be a lower estimate for value.
My understanding of the appraisal process, Mr. Homoki, and anyone can correct me, is that they typically appraise to the highest and best use. So I don't think you can go in and say, just appraise this as green space or appraise this if we only build on 2 acres. The appraiser, you know, uses a process and comparables and a method. And frankly, Ms. Post is somebody that I've had the occasion to work with in Aiken over 2 decades and has done a very thorough job in the appraisals that I've seen.
But Steve's point's quite well taken. We're looking for this for remediation land, not to build on it.
I appreciate the appraisal is probably correct if you're considering building on the northwest and the southeast corner of the plot. But our intention is not to build on it. If so, wouldn't the city make an offer which is actually less than the appraisal value? Because to us, we don't really garner any benefit from having any buildable aspect to the property. We don't want to build on it. So consequently, the value to us would be less.
Well, but in the past, anytime we've come to you with a purchase, we've always gone with fair market value. We're trying to treat the seller fairly in paying what the value of the property would be based on the location.
We don't represent the seller, Mr. City Manager. We represent the taxpayer.
I'm not saying that we represent the seller. The I'm saying what council has done in past purchases.
Well, I understand.
And that's what I base, you know, how we bring things to council. And the fact of the matter is an appraiser is not going to come in and give you, you know, fire sale value, you know, highest or best use. They're going to give you a fair market value by comparisons to other properties. And that's just typically what's done.
Mr. Mayor.
I think Peggy wants to make a comment.
Mayor, if
I certainly can't. Peggy, come on up. And
if I may, please. It seems as though there's a consensus on council that this would be good for the city to go ahead and purchase this piece of property for many different reasons that have been mentioned here tonight, one of which would be to help with the remediation of stormwater in Hitchcock Woods, which is a program in which we're currently involved in. The other would be the educational opportunities for our students, for them to go into an area and see the ecological environment working, as well as provide a park for our citizens to go through. I think this would also bring folks in from out of town. I mean, there could potentially even be some money from the accommodations tax that could be used in fixing up an area such as this. I think what we're trying to figure out is where would the funding come from? You know, is it coming out of an open space green space account, or is it coming out of a Sand River remediation account, which both of those we have in the additional 1% sales tax? I think potentially some could come from each instead of all of it coming out of one account if that's necessary. But I think that's something that if we have a consensus to purchase the property, that's something that possibly staff could figure out which would be the best avenues.
We certainly can do that.
Right. Ms. Penland?
My name is Peggy Penland. I'm here in one of my many roles tonight as president of Hounds Lake Corporation, and I'm a broker at Hounds Lake Realty. First of all, Larry, did they not get the map that was in the appraisal?
Okay. Yeah,
did receive the aerial view of the property.
It's rather hard to see once it's been it a couple of times.
And it is. Well, it is it is the border of Cumberland Village, the Southwest Aiken Bypass. It borders along Devil Road and along the city property, Wise Creek. And I would not advocate that the city spend a lot of money on this property to improve or make a park out of it. I know my father surely would not. But the important part about the buildable acreage is this. On the southeastern section of the property and the northwestern section, it is buildable. It is high ground. I would like to see the property remain green space, and I do think it should come out of the green space account, but that's your decision. Mm-hmm. There is a sign in front of the property. We're here tonight to offer it to the city. And depending upon what you decide to do, we'll make a decision as to whether or not to put it in the multiple listing service. I think it is appropriate that the city own this property. I think it's good for the city, and like I say, green space would be the best use, in my opinion. Are there any questions? Okay, the other thing I thought was important was that when my dad was in charge of it, the University of South Carolina at Aiken requested on numerous occasions to come down with their instructors requested permission to bring the students to learn about wetlands. Mm-hmm. There is a bit, what I understand, and these folks here know a lot more about it than I do, but I understand that there is a very good filtration system on this property. There is a lot of wildlife.
Peggy, I wanted to ask, you made a comment of your opinion that you would like to see it stay basically like
right.
It is. Well, why is that?
Why is that?
Yeah. Is it because?
Because I think it's beautiful, and I think it is because of its location right across the street from Hitchcock Woods. We have, Mr. Mayor, a lot of green space still in Hounds Lake. Mm-hmm. This is not contiguous with the Hounds Lake
right.
tract,
right.
but it was part of the original tract. Mm-hmm. There was 300 acres, which is now where you live, mm-hmm. Westcliff, Dibble Road, and yeah. this piece. And then there was the 1,600 acres, which is the Hounds Lake community. We have a lot of other green spaces in Hounds Lake, mm-hmm. and we may be talking about this some other time in the future, but in this one is the most sensitive because of its location and due to the
habitat
work that is in progress right now. It seems to me, from what I've heard, that it would be part of the solution of the storm drainage mm-hmm. issues mm-hmm. with the Hitchcock Foundation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I would appreciate yeah. your consideration.
Well, I just wanted to ask that question just to find out.
Because it's very pretty. We're really kind of connected to the property. But
right. Well, I appreciate you offering it to the city.
It's my husband thinks that you can put some horses on it.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, I'd like to see it stay green and wooded.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I hope you won't spend a bunch of money on it.
Thank you very much.
Mayor, Ms. Penland put it in better words than I did. You know, if you're going to leave it green space and you don't touch it, it's one thing, but if you're going to develop it, or I shouldn't use the word develop it, but basically you're using a stormwater mitigation development there. You know, it'd be in what pot and what pool of the money would go in. If it goes in green space, I don't think you ought to mess with it. If it goes in for the stormwater remediation, then you're going to essentially have a stormwater mitigation plan. And Mr. Morris yeah. has probably got better words for it than me.
Well, I think
so either way, I still need to purchase it. Yeah. I don't disagree with that.
If we purchase it, I think we've got to do something to make sure that that water flows, which it really is not flowing much now.
Well,
you go down and look at it at the bridge, and you don't see a whole lot of movement. Something is holding it up, so something has to be done. Okay. You know, regardless of whether we buy it or not, something has to be done.
But, Mr. Mayor,
there.
How can we question? Mr. Ebner said, as soon as you put the first shovel in the ground, when you say you're going to use it for remediation or whatever for the water flow, you said as soon as we touch it, all of a sudden you have to do an EPA compliance study and so forth.
I need him to say that, but that's where I would come from.
And consequently, if we leave it as just open space and never touch it and not worry about the water going, which doesn't solve your problem.
Anybody's problem. You talk to the neighbors, Dan. I just live around the corner from it.
No, I'm kind of confused now. If you know, Mr. Ebner said, you know, we can keep it as green space as long as we don't touch it. As soon as we touch it, all of a sudden we've got various EPA considerations. You know, we have to do studies and...
I'm not sure busting up a beaver dam qualifies as the kind of stuff that Mr. Ebner's talking about.
I don't know. Reggie might know.
I can't talk about beaver dams, but Mr. Morris knows what I'm referring to once you scratch the surface.
Larry, can you give us some words on that?
I think what Mr. Ebner is talking to is if we went in to develop the site, to excavate the site, to make large detention areas where we would have what's called sand receptors, and then we'd go dig sand out and move it and all that. Yes, Mr. Ebner's correct. That is not the vision of Dr. Eitzen nor the EPA personnel that have worked with us. The vision is that it remains a wetlands area, which is very viable and very elastic, if you will, but to be used as a sand receptor area so that as the sand naturally flushes out of the Hitchcock Woods Cathedral Isle area, and that area starts coming back with the native wetlands plants, that sand will migrate and it will get into this area. Because we would own it, then we do not have to worry about the fact that we're damaging that property with the sand. Okay, as part of the remediation, that sand needs to move, and it will move naturally. We've seen that from the sand moving from the headwaters, which is up right near south boundary, and now the sand is down at Cathedral Isle. Years ago, we had to go in. We had about 2 feet, 3 feet of sand in the showroom. We had to truck all of that out. Just from where the sand had moved and had formed an accretion there, had formed sandbars. That's what will happen with this area. The ecology of this area will absorb that and will change and do that. Again, what we have to make sure of is that we still have water channels through it. Mm-hmm. And we would certainly work with EPA, with the DNR, and with Corps of Engineers on that. But as long as we don't put a dredge in there and start trying to dredge out major pools or something, we're not going to have an issue with that.
So, but what you're essentially saying is that this piece of property would be an essential part of the Sand River remediation program.
It's that is the way that we would envision it. I personally have a little bit more of a vision of having it as a park area. If you've ever visited Orangeburg and seen what they've done with their area down there.
Yeah.
I just think it's a tremendous area, and
it's gorgeous.
Very inexpensive to do when you start looking at how you can put boardwalks in. And
would you do that before we finish the Sand River ecological project?
That would be a portion of it.
Okay.
Ms. Penland was talking about, USCA has been down in the area to use it as an educational opportunity. I've personally conducted tours at Hopelands and at Schofield School with the wetlands that we created there with their classes. I just see this as being something that we could use as a project that would draw in the educators. And I have no problem at all going to EPA with a plan and say, this is part of what we want to do. We want to be able to draw people in and see if they would help us with funding even. I don't know that they would, but all they can do is tell me no.
I've got a question, Mr. March. On if the lot is buildable, does it qualify as wetlands, or what percentage of this 32 acres is actually wetlands? Is it just 10 feet from where the water is supposed to run? Is it all the way to the borders, all the way up to the verge on Devil Road, or right up against the woods at Cumberland? Or
I do not have an answer on that, Mr. Hmoke. I could get that information for you as far as acreage. But there are the two sites, as Ms. Penland stated, that could be buildable. Those sites could be very important to us, especially if we wanted to develop a park-like area. Let me refer to the riverfront area, the old brick ponds that have been developed by the city of North Augusta. Very beautiful area. They were the old sludge brick ponds from decades ago. And they do have a small visitor's pavilion, if you will. It's not enclosed. It's just an little open-air area and a parking area. Well, we would need these flat areas for that. So they would be very valuable to us in doing something with this property. And it would also give us an opportunity right there then that if we do have a work area, if you will, for universities to come in and use it as a teaching area, or for the ACOLT to come in and work with us on that, much as they did with the Carolina Bay on Price Avenue. Long-range planning, yes, we could have a pavilion there. We could have an environmental center there, just looking 20 years down the road. Mm-hmm. I get excited when I see a child with a little, what they call a loop, and they've dipped up some water and they find a water flea in it. Mm-hmm. I get excited when I see them do that, especially when one of them happens mm-hmm. to be a grandchild, but that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the bottom line of this whole thing is that we need that property. Now, our drainage water has been going through that property for how many years? Ever since God made the earth, perhaps. I don't know. But anyway, what would we do if the land is sold for something else? And I don't know if it's possible or not, but whoever the purchaser would be would say, look, you take your water and put it somewhere else. That may be a stretch, but anyway, I think we need it. I think it would help us a lot. It would certainly help that situation at the bridge, in my view, if we can get that cleared up. So I think we need that property. I'm just glad Ms. Penland has offered it to the city before going out public, otherwise to sell it to somewhere else. Let me make one other comment. Dick, I heard you talking about two bids. Bids on thing or
praise.
I agree with you. However, Richard and I exchanged emails on that today. I said, how come we only had one bid, one appraisal? That was before I had the package to look at. I think, in this case, I think she's done a very good job of coming up with a good price on this property, $3,600 an acre. She's taken four other situations in different places and given us that kind of information, as we all know, you've read it, and taken kind of a mid-range of all those. And, short of having another appraisal, which I think the cat's out of the bag now, I think anybody could come up with a lesser appraisal now, lesser cost, regardless of whether it should be or not. I've worked in purchasing a long time with the DuPont Company, and we always had at least two appraisals. If we didn't, we would negotiate with the company that had what we wanted to have a contract such that we could buy certain pieces of electrical equipment for a price, a given price. But given the way, after reading this, given the way she's done it, I think that she's done as good as she probably could, that anybody could do, since she's had these four other properties around, not just in Aiken, but Barnwell, there's a couple in Barnwell, and to come up with that median price of $3,600 acre. I wish my acre I bought around the corner there was $3,600 when I bought it. But it wasn't.
Well, I don't quibble with the quality of the appraisal, Mr. Mayor. It's just a matter of principle.
Well, I think the principle is excellent. Yeah. I said the same thing in my email.
I wish we'd adopted.
I'd like to see in the future two or three, if necessary.
This is over $1 million worth of property that we've purchased in the last year and a half.
Yeah.
With just one appraisal. We just accept the buyer's offer, and I don't think there's anybody in the council ever walked on a car parking lot that just said the first offer, sure, here you go. I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
I think we owe the taxpayer more, but...
I say all that to say that I think in this particular case, I could live with this appraisal myself.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we purchase this property and amendment to it that the staff look at which pocket of local option sales tax money the money comes out of, or a joint purchase, whichever is appropriate.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we have a second. Any other discussion?
Are you saying staff would make the decision where it would go?
Yes. Mr. Pierce is very familiar with how it's done, and I think we've made our point to if it is a large part of this could be remediation, so I would expect it to be divided up at least in some manner.
Let me say I agree with purchase of property, but as for reasons before, I'll vote against it. I'd like to have a second appraisal.
Okay. Any other comments before we vote?
Just the two options that was proposed. I think Don mentioned Sand River and the open space, green space. So those are the two things that we should be looking at in terms of trying to decide whether we want to split the cost or from one bucket or another.
Okay. Why don't we let staff decide that?
Right.
I have confidence in staff that...
I'm okay with that.
Okay. If there are no other comments, show of hands, please. All approval? Okay. Opposed? Okay. Okay. Passes 6-1. Item 5, approval of the site work and parking lot agreement for land owned by First Baptist Church on York Street. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a resolution authorizing the approval of an agreement for a joint-use parking lot. We presented this at our last meeting, and Council expressed an interest in having a design for the proposed parking lot as well as an estimated cost. Let's see, where did Mr. Morris, you went all the way back to the room, and you know we need you again because you worked on this. Mr. Morris is here. We've met out on site and walked the property, and I believe you have in your packet that the plan that he has the aerial photo of would be an estimated $42,000 cost. So for approval tonight is a resolution approving the agreement and proceeding forward.
Okay. All right. Larry, do you want to add something?
Before Larry talks, I think there was a question about the zoning for the property. It is zoned downtown business and is also within the downtown overlay district.
So the property itself is business?
Downtown business is the zoning, right. Okay. And that's true for the house that's immediately
and the house
adjacent.
Also?
Yep.
Okay. That answers one of my questions. Then let Mr. Morris explain, and then we can go on.
Okay. Larry, do you have anything to add, or are you waiting for questions?
I can take questions, Mr. Mayor. I would let Council know that when we did design the parking area, we did try to take into account the needs for planting, to have planting strips adjacent to the residential areas, also to have tree islands, irrigation, and to address the stormwater issue, which is adjacent to the African American Center. So in addition to some lights that we would put in there. So the parking lot would meet our planning department regulations with some minor tweaking. Mr. Evans and I have talked a little bit about that, but basically we should be in pretty good shape.
Okay, and all those things you mentioned are here in our packet.
They're in my memo and
page 2,
right behind the picture is where my memo is.
157. I think.
Oh, okay, 157.
Right, correct. Page 157.
Okay.
And the best estimate we can put together right now is $42,200. Mr. Rapp has also looked at it and has come up with a planting plan that he feels would be appropriate for the area.
Okay. Comments?
The only comment I would have, and at the time when I toured the area with several of the city employees and Mr. Brody, I don't think we realize that the house is non-residential. And so would we really need to put that 5-foot planting strip along that property that's business, that's classified as business there?
I do not think we would have to put it between two businesses if they're owned by the same entity. And I believe First Baptist does own both of them.
That's correct. That's my understanding.
Right. It would, if you think about it, it would dress up the area. Depending on what they use that house for, even though it may not be a residence as such, depending on its use, that may be a very good investment for us to go ahead and dress up the parking area there. I think that'd be a question Mr. Evans and I would need to meet on and talk over just what we would need to do there. Maybe we need to add another tree island or something like that.
Well, my concern would be we don't want to get crossways in some other area of the city where we've done joint things like this, and it is happens to be, in this case, between two businesses rather against residential. And I think it would be a very good discussion to have that we don't set a precedent for doing that. So, and that would be my comment, that let's look at, be sure we're not setting a precedent there of putting something between two businesses. And I'm all for the rest of it. The stormwater needs to be done in the worst way there.
Yes,
it really does.
And certainly Mr. Evans and I will talk and make sure that we don't set a precedent with what we're trying to do there.
Larry, would there be any reserve parking or any kind of parking spots reserved for specific uses anytime, you know, during a week or during a weekend?
Under the agreement on Sunday, First Baptist Church wants use of the parking lot for
Have any problems with that, but are there any other restrictions on, is it exclusively for use by the First Baptist Church on Sunday, or what if somebody just wants to pull into the Heritage Park or whatever?
On Sunday, as the agreement says, it would be dedicated for First Baptist Church. The parking lot would be open for the remainder of the week. Certainly, depending on what the small building there is used for, that would be something, and I know Mr. Brody is here and can speak to whether or not they would want to try to reserve two or three spaces for that building during the week if it was used. But we do have several spaces in there that normally during the week we just do not see that many cars there. Certainly when the African American Center opens, we should see some more cars there. But we also have the parking area adjacent to the Wesley Church there, which is the brick parking area that we constructed. So we do have a lot of parking in the area available now.
What you'll see on page 150 is the church reserves between the hours of 8 and 1 p.m. exclusive use of the lot, and then they do reserve the right to give 24-hour advance written notice to the public safety director if they need to use that lot.
Larry, why are we doing this at this time?
We were approached by First Baptist Church about this quite a while back. And that was during the time we were trying to develop additional parking areas in the downtown area. Certainly with the African American Center and the park that we've are working developing there, we wanted to have some public parking in the area. Eventually, it would be very simple to create a promenade, if you would, between the African American Center down Richland, possibly along Fairfield and then through C Lane to the Railroad Depot, and kind of tie these two pieces of Aiken history together.
As it exists now, does the church use that parking lot on Sundays?
I go by there every Sunday and I do see cars in it. Yes,
is it full? Wow. Because they have a massive parking lot as it is.
They use it for weddings. They use
how many slots are there, Larry? Parking slots.
Mr. Mayor, I'm embarrassed, but I did not count them.
I don't know if we can see them all, within the picture. If that's all, 38.
And the red parking lot that you spoke about, that is ours as well, is it not?
The brick parking lot.
Yes.
Is one that we constructed, and again, the church uses it on Sunday, and then we have it through the week.
Yeah, there are probably two churches. I don't know whether First Baptist would use it, but the church right at the corner would use it.
Right.
Yeah. And that would suffice during the week for people wanting to go to Heritage Park?
I would think so, yes, sir.
Okay, so the real need for this is on the part of First Baptist Church, which needs parking, and our ultimate plan to provide parking for the Cultural Center.
That is correct.
And in terms of time frame for need by the Cultural Center, do we have any idea when that would be?
I met with Mr. McDonald Law after Mr. Brody and I met with Mr. Pierce and Mr. Ebner last week, and they have considerable work to do on the foundation of the building. The way the building is constructed is very innovative for the time period it was constructed in. What looks like a little brick curtain wall between piers actually isn't. It's actually holding up the floor. It is a floating floor. I've never seen one like that, but it's just really an interesting structure. They're going to have to rebuild that entire area before we go in with our storm drainage. And our storm drainage has to go in first. We don't want to bring in big trucks and everything going over green concrete curbs. So the time frame is going to be pretty well dependent on them.
So if we approve this tonight, it's liable to be an extended period before you can do anything.
Mr. Brody, a little help here, please.
90 days.
90 days.
90 days, you've got the money to start putting on that building?
We're at that contract on the screen.
Now we're just talking about the brickwork on the bottom, not completing the building.
And of the $42,000, how much is related to the drainage? How much of that is drainage?
I've got about $12,000 in drainage.
In drainage?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Well, Mr. Mayor, just in general principle, if the city is actually paying for all the work to upgrade the parking lot, I kind of have a bad feeling about anybody else other than the city putting restrictions on who can park there, when, and how. I know it's probably not going to be bigger, that much of a conflict, but in general, I think that stipulation should be removed. I just don't see where the city should pay for a parking lot, and even though it's a First Baptist Church property, how they can actually restrict who can park there when the city's the one that actually made it viable.
I think that'd be something certainly that we as staff would discuss with them. At this point, what's in front of council is allowing staff to proceed with the discussion to try to hammer out the agreement and fine-tune it. And then if it needed to come back before council, certainly I would bring that back to Mr. Pierce for council.
Steve, are you saying on Sundays you don't think they should be allowed to say
I think it should be first come, first serve. I mean, there's not going to be much competition because there's really not that much, that many competing entities looking for parking places. However, I just hesitate to say the tax, people in the city are going to pony up tax dollars. The city's going to do it, and then some outside entity is going to tell us we can park there or not.
Baptist Church being the outside entity. You're talking about the Baptist Church being
I'm talking about the Baptist Church or the...
So from 8 to 1 on Sunday. Is that the only time?
No, I just don't see that.
Okay, I understand your point. Okay.
I don't care if it's 1 hour. It's the general principle.
Okay.
But who owns the parking lot in the first place? Isn't it the church's
church
parking
owns
lot?
The building and the lot. Yeah. Wade
Brody, 422 York Street. I believe we have a similar agreement with Regions Bank on the playhouse. Regions Bank reserves the use of that lot from early morning till 6 in the afternoon, then it's available for people using the playhouse. We've got a similar agreement with the Aiken Corporation on 20 parking spaces at that location where they are reserved for URS employees, and then thereafter it's open for public parking. So there is precedent for what we're suggesting.
Well, was it city funds that built that parking lot behind the theater and joining URS?
Aiken Corporation did the 20 spaces, but the big parking lot is owned by Regents. But, Richard, you correct me if I'm wrong. It's my recollection that the city upgraded that parking lot as part of the agreement to be able to use it after business hours. So we ask in a similar situation for the church, really.
Was it the city funds that upgraded, what did the city do to upgrade that parking lot? I don't know.
What, at Regions or?
The one at Regions and the one behind the theater were URS is, or adjoining URS.
Basically, a little landscaping, which is similar to what we're talking about over at First Baptist, and resurfacing the parking lot.
We did curb and gutter, too.
Curb and gutter, striping.
Planting.
That was before my time, but I think that's probably not a good precedent that was set. I mean, I understand.
Well, if you're looking at providing parking, and I think the city has some responsibility to provide not all parking, but some parking, it's a good use of public funds, I think, to have joint agreements like this to provide parking. Similar things have been done behind other buildings. We working through the Aiken Corporation and working with the city, brought together 8 property owners from New Moon down to where the new condos are now, and with various agreements, either donating property or giving leases, the city went in and did the curbs and gutters and planting, and actually painted the backs of the buildings, and this provided 40 parking spaces. And you know, the figure sticks in the mind of a space being worth $20,000. Probably not in today's market, but if you look at the First Baptist project, the city would have about $1,100 per parking space, so I think it's a good deal. As Larry pointed out, we've had a lot of discussion about tying this historical area together, and plans are already in process to do a walking trail from the cultural center down to the depot. Some landscaping has been done already in those areas. So
wait, you're going a little bit off track from my point. My point is not, I think it's a worthwhile venture. I'm just a little bit disappointed that there are restrictions on the public who pay for parking lot being as restricted from parking there. That's, you know, that's the only, you know, that's my point. You know, I'm not talking about the merits of developing the parking lot or whatever. I think it's probably a good idea. I'm just a little bit concerned, even if it's a 5 minutes. I mean, if I can't park there and I'm the guy that ponied up the money as a taxpayer for developing a parking lot, either that or if, in fact, you know, they want to put restrictions on it, then perhaps, you know, if it was a shared cost, you know, if the First Baptist Church turned around and said, let's share the cost, you know, 50-50, then I could see where they would have some, you know, voice in restricting who can park there and who can't park there. Yeah. That's basically...
Well, would you say the same thing for the parking lot at Regions at the Blounds?
Well, before my time, so yeah. I don't know what transpired, how it was done. But there were, you know, there's certain things.
Just looking at use now of the church lot and what I envision as long-term use, I frankly don't see any parking problems at all, really.
Can I park in the Regent's parking lot at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and not go to the Regent's bank?
You might get towed away.
That's exactly my point. But it was tax dollars that actually... develop that parking lot. Right?
But if there had been a problem at Regions Bank, I'm sure we'd have heard about it.
If that was part of an economic development incentive, and if you remember the before and after photographs we showed you of Newberry Street, that was to get the corporate headquarters there and have the joint use with the theater, and that was just part of bringing a huge economic impact into the city. And I mean, tax dollars are used every day in order to promote business in the area, and that was seen as a good long-term use of taxpayer money, and I think it's paid great dividends to us. I mean,
to add to that,
payments coming in.
Excuse me. The URS pays $20,000 a month for lease space. We have 40-plus people working in the building, so we have 20 parking spaces designated for our folks. We pay it to the city.
You know, the way we get things done and have for years in our city is by partnerships, working with each other to make something good happen. I have no problem at all with them being able to use that parking lot from those periods of time that they need it. I bet you 80%, if not more, of those people that go to that church pay city taxes. And they're taxpayers too. And I just don't have a problem with that. Based also on the agreements we've already got that Wade has talked about,
Now, that's my personal opinion, Steve. I appreciate yours, but I've got an opinion as well, and I suppose everyone does here.
Mr. Mayor, let me just add that there are many, many times that the URS does not have full use of those spaces. Somebody will come and eat at the pizza place, and there's not enough space for our folks to park. We'll find alternate places to park. No one is called and saying somebody's car needs to be towed or anything. So it's just a way we live over across the street. So it's a working partnership with those folks who want to park and eat, and they're there no more than an hour and a half, and they're gone. So no one, we have not heard of anybody being towed as a result of parking in what's designated as a URS parking area during working hours or in the Regions Bank area.
You know, besides that, this area is going to be beautified. It's an interest to our city. And there are a lot of pluses here that working together we can accomplish something good. And I'd hate to see something like this destroy that partnership aspect of what we're doing.
Great project with a long-term vision. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Mayor, I agree with you. I think it's a good idea. I think it's feasible. I just don't think there should be restrictions on when and who can park there anytime if it involves tax dollars.
Okay. All right.
One of the things I need to ask you about is the fact that it is the First Baptist Church's property, right? And on the around the corner where Wesley United Methodist Church is, did they not give property to put down the paved parking area on that side
as
well?
We negotiated with Wesley for probably a year. Mm-hmm. Got them to agree to give a 20-foot strip. We brought this to the city. And the city agreed to do a 20-foot strip, so that's how new parking was developed over at Wesley.
Okay, so we have lots of instances where we have partnered with people in the community to do what we have to do simply because we can't grow new land, and downtown is kind of, well, pretty much landlocked. I mean, we can't create, the only thing we can create is a huge cement parking garage. And I think people prefer to see what we do in joint efforts than to see a big cement structure go up in the air in the city of Aiken.
Well, Aiken is going to grow to the east, and this parking will assist that growth. We mentioned the parking at Wesley. That's kind of out of the way unless you're coming in on 215-302. You probably would use that parking lot. If you're coming in number one after Heritage Park is developed and you want to get out and stretch your legs, you could use the parking lot at First Baptist Church.
I have a couple of questions for the attorney. Just to keep you busy, Gary. Paragraph F, as I understand paragraph F, which is on page 2, the city needs to provide the church with proof of insurance, a certificate of insurance, and that essentially anything that happens on that property is the city's legal responsibility. And am I reading it correct, except when the church is using it in their designated time frame?
I think the second sentence of paragraph F makes it clear that nothing in providing this information should impute any responsibility to the city.
By owners, agents.
The city's just recognizing that they do have an interest in the lot and the safety of the lot. They want to make sure that the city actually has that covered
so
on their insurance policy.
So anytime the church or the church representatives use the property and there's a legal issue, it's on them. And any time the public uses it, it's on the city.
That's what lawyers will argue. But
yes.
I mean,
and this
the lawyers that are suing are going to sue everybody they can think
sure
of to sue.
Yeah.
But this is similar to the agreements we've had, and we have these agreements. We have this kind of agreement with the church next door.
With Regions Bank, you have a similar.
I think this is a copy of what we've got with Regions Bank. I think this is a copy of the agreement that we have with Regions Bank. I think that's where they got this agreement
from.
It's based.
Okay. It's based.
And the only other thing I have is that it's a guarantee for 10 years, and there's no out for anybody for under any circumstances. I always like a reasonable out. I mean, I can't imagine any reason why we'd want to sever the agreement, but I don't see any way to do that the way this is written. And again, I'm not an attorney, but I'd like to see an option under in extraordinary circumstances that mutual to both parties that we could. There is a in paragraph G said after 10 years and upon renewal of the agreement, each party is subject to a 30-day notice. But for 10 years, there's no out. So I would just bring that to the attention of council. If you want to deal with it, it's up to council.
Dick, I would think that would be perhaps a negotiable issue there.
Well, the 10 years would allow the city to recoup their investment. There's a thought there, I would.
Mr. Mayor, are you ready for a motion to approve this?
Well, if there's no more discussion on this point.
I'd like to move that we approve the agreement with First Baptist Church and the City of Aiken.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wade. Item 6, first reading of an ordinance to amend City Code Section 22-10 regarding the offense of public indecency.
Yeah. Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance amending the Aiken City Code regarding public indecency. Council's aware of a notice we received about performance to be held in Aiken, and the question was whether or not the performance would violate the existing public indecency law. Our review by our attorneys said there would be a violation under the city code as it was stated, however, that federal law trumps the local law in that the provision was unenforceable. Upon receiving that information, I asked that Gary Smith revise the public indecency law to more correct current existing law. That has been reviewed by our city solicitor, who would be prosecuting cases under the law. They find that these revisions are advisable at this time, given the state of law in South Carolina and in our country under federal law. So this is first reading of that ordinance to amend the city code section as contained in your packet.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second to pass this?
I move for approval of this ordinance on first reading, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. I'll second it. Discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. New business number 7, resolution to purchase 1260 Alfred Street in Crosland Park. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a resolution authorizing us to purchase a lot in Crosland Park neighborhood in the city of Aiken. It's located at 1269 Alfred Street. The price is $50,000. As I mentioned in my memo, we are buying this property because, unfortunately, there was a sewer backup into the property, and the house was shut up, and the raw sewage sat in the house for approximately a two-month period of time. We had our insurance adjuster investigate this situation and also had Lex Kirkland, who is our risk manager, assess the situation. Well, I certainly discussed it with Larry Morris, our utilities, engineering and utilities department director. With the state of the sewer system in Crosland Park, we have had to go in and remediate other backups and have spent far more than the purchase price of this lot. And to assist council in the decision on this resolution tonight, we have entered into preliminary discussions with Habitat for Humanity, and they are interested in constructing a new house on the lot if we, you know, obtain the property and then raise the existing structure, it's just not something that we can rehabilitate as we are doing with other homes in the park, given the fact that the raw sewage stayed in the house for so long and whipped up into the walls. It's just something that cannot be fixed. So we're coming to council seeking appropriate authority to purchase the property and then raise the structure and then enter into negotiations with Habitat for Humanity for a possible construction of a new structure on the property.
Was that just an abandoned house?
It was just not being used. It wasn't abandoned.
Somebody owned it.
Yeah, it was heir property. An estate was involved, and it wasn't being used.
Okay. We've got this resolution. Do we have a motion and a second?
I so move, Mr. Mayor, that we purchase the house on 1269 Alfred Street, and I'm really glad to know that you would be willing to work with Habitat to get a house built on that lot.
Great. Great. Do we have a second?
Second, sir. Second.
Okay.
Quick question.
Sure.
Who owns this property today?
We put the contract in your packet. It's owned by Kenneth Williams and Leanne Williams.
So obviously he's not a resident.
No, it was not being used as a residence.
But
that's why
he owned it.
They own it. That is correct.
Do they not have some responsibility financially here?
Well, that's what we investigated, Mayor, with our insurance adjuster and with our risk manager. We've determined that we would be responsible for renovating the property as we had to do with two others in the neighborhood, given the nature of the backup. But this was seen as a way to save a great deal of money in not having to renovate the property, which we think is not.
So we're buying it from them for $50,000.
That's correct. The city of Aiken would purchase it.
The city swamped if there was a backup.
That was the opinion of our risk manager and the insurance adjuster.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, we got a motion and a second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Petitions, requests from the Greater Chamber of Commerce to use Park Avenue for the annual Aiken's Making Festival in September. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Diane Phillips has sat very patiently tonight, and she's representing the Greater Aiken Chamber of Commerce. You've been very well behaved, too, Diane. I want that in the record. That's why I said it out loud.
That is a surprise.
It is. And this will be the 35th renewal of the Aiken's Making celebration, and we are going to use Park Avenue, where the displays will actually be in the center of the streets. So we're not going to block the businesses downtown this year. This is another iteration of the setup, and we think it's going to be a lot more amenable to businesses to be on Park Avenue and open and have customers, and folks can get in and out much easier. And also, Mayor, there is some discussion afoot. John McMichael took me aside at Rotary today. Since there's not going to be the first Friday means business going on that particular Friday, there may be some sort of ribbon cutting ceremony, and they're maybe looking for someone with ribbon cutting expertise
experience
to start the festival. Right, start the Aiken's Making. But for approval by City Council tonight, it is for the Chamber to yet again use the Park Avenue right away and the parkways as necessary to conduct the Aiken's Making Festival.
Okay, very good. Do we have a motion and second?
Mr. Mayor.
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that
I'll
we
second.
Approve this.
Y'all make Gary sing at this opening, okay?
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Thank you, Diane.
And Diane, you can go back and tell David that that Gary really does sit through all these meetings.
Yeah. Okay, item two, schedule for the council meetings in July and August 2011. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, we wanted to bring this to council at the start of the summer season. Typically, we have not had the second meeting in July and August to allow council members and staff to schedule their annual family vacations, and we would just ask for approval for cancellation of the second Monday meetings in July and August. Of course, if an important issue comes up, there's a pressing matter, we could certainly still meet, but nevertheless, we would like to go ahead and get that approval from council so we can plan accordingly.
Well, you know the dates of the ones we will have in August?
I do.
The date of the one?
I do.
I don't have my
You phone. Would meet on July 11 and August 8.
Okay. Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
Well, I got a comment before we go. One of the considerations might be actually to have the July, I'm trying to get my calendar to work here,
the
July 11th meeting, and then instead of having the August 8th meeting, just have the August 22nd meeting. And that way that would give people a lot more time in between the meetings in case they plan an extended vacation.
And Mayor, it's however council would care to do it. We can work with councils.
That sounds fine.
Yeah. Would that affect any of the business decisions from the business community, whether that be, you know, downtown business or city businesses or development? That'd be the only thing you would be. You could make somebody drag it out for 3 months rather than 2 months. That'd be the only consideration I think we need to keep in mind. It would be from the business side.
And again, typically and historically, council has just eliminated the second meetings. I think we did the same thing in December.
I'd just assume stay where we were, yeah.
Okay, stay where we were. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. For show of hands, please, for approval of this schedule. Okay.
I'm not sure what I'm voting on, but I guess
it's to meet.
Is that like Steve's daddy?
It's to go ahead and meet on July 11 and August 8.
Right.
For your summer meet.
It passed. Did you vote for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't get who seconded the motion. Okay, thank you.
Okay, and then one last item, Dick, SCDOT.
Yeah, I haven't been able to go anywhere, and I've got to believe the rest of you have had a similar issue without somebody talking about the yellow signs. And then once you talk about the yellow signs, you get into a couple of other issues. We got residents on Homestead Lane that are waiting to get repaved and working an issue on Newbury Bridge. But primarily the yellow sign issue, I guess it's a little frustration because I read on the paper that the mayor and the city manager have met with SCDOT, and quite frankly, I'm not sure I like reading in the mayor and the city manager meet with SCDOT, and I don't know what they said or what the conclusions were. And when people ask me about the signs, all I can say is, I don't know. They met, and I'm sure they're working it, and I'm sure you were. We did get an item in the packet, and I think Richard has some addition to that packet. I think when we get to a controversial item, and I'm sure SCDOT never thought it was going to get controversial, but when we get to that item, I would just ask that we be kept informed because we have a very active community, and they get on us. We're talking about that redistricting. They don't care who they see. Whoever they see, they're going to.
And again, Mr. DeWalt, I have no problem sharing any information that comes to my office. I've shared that with you numerous times. The fact is we went to the meeting and DOT put it in a holding pattern because they said they wanted to come study it and take a couple weeks. So the only thing to report was, as you told folks, DOT was working on it based on the concerns we gave them. And it was just last week, and it was Thursday of last week, that we finally heard something from the DOT safety program engineer, and they are actually going to remove the sign at the Chamber of Commerce building and one on South Boundary at Whiskey Road. In their inspection, they saw where several of the sign installations they felt were proper based on site distance issues, but then realized the question of the site distance was plant material. So they went around with our arboretist, Tom Rapp, and did a considerable inspection and have identified several intersections where, with the proper trimming of the plant material that's in those intersections and near those signs, there may be additional signs that are no longer necessary. So it's an ongoing thing with them.
Well,
we anticipate getting some more information about further sign removal, because our horticulturist and arboretist is in the process going around with his crews to clear out that plant material.
Well, I understand, and I would assume that they have the same traffic data that our public safety does in terms of accidents and collisions, in terms of which intersections are good. And by the way, they're spending money to redo the Greg Avenue one.
They are.
It's not even in the top 10 within the city, just for curiosity, because I did ask for and get those. So it might have been a dangerous intersection years ago, but I don't know, I'm just a little frustrated. I wish they'd, when we work with them, when we talk to them, I'm very happy. They're very professional. They're very easy to work with, but to just come into the city and do that, without coordinating, I'm just disturbed, as are many citizens. Do you know, Richard, if is there anything on Homestead Lane repaving? They first said May, then they said June.
You know, as far as we know, it's still on the list to be paved. Larry, have you heard any revised dates?
I've not heard any revised dates since the last one. They revised it from May into June.
Right. Right. So, when you talk with DOT, the Homestead Lane situation, they have a contractor that they have paving. So they have a list here locally of streets they were going to pave. Then they pulled that contractor off and sent them to a different area to pave. And again, they don't necessarily send that information to us. We try to follow up and ask and keep up as current as we can with the information.
Well, I just wanted to echo the frustration. I'd like to have more current data when people talk about it. And obviously, I'm not critical of what's going on.
This information I got in an email Thursday at 2:42 p.m., and I believe I immediately sent it to the mayor and members of council.
Yeah.
So as soon as I get information, I'm pushing it out to you.
Dick, your point's well taken.
Okay. Thank you.
Communication is that's at the foundation of just about all of our problems that we have. If you have a problem, it's miscommunication, a lack of communication. It is, in fact, what Richard said. They said they needed to look around. I pointed out a couple intersections. Of course, Tom Young's list of intersections, they're looking at those. And then now there's some more. As you look around, there are even more. It's ridiculous when you do come up Chesterfield, and you get to the courthouse. And just the little glance to the left, you see four or five.
Yeah, that's the Bill Reynolds. That's the Bill Reynolds.
Don't go beyond.
Yeah, there are actually 16 do not enter signs. And when we asked about those signs, remember, Mayor, they said that was the Orangeburg office that directed that installation.
And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. A six-year-old wouldn't do that, in my opinion.
Well, we've been getting great support from Tom Young, Representative Tom Young, on this issue.
Tom has been fantastic.
He has just taken a bull by the horn, so I hope he got a copy of Bill Reynolds' email.
Well, he did.
Absolutely.
I got a question.
Yes, sir.
When you go to some churches, they have Bibles that are easier to read for the senior citizens. It seems to me these signs are bigger. Is this because of the average population of Aiken is older?
Yes. Yeah, but change at Woodside, Steve.
Regular signs.
Those signs are all over the state, they all look just alike.
Yeah, when you talk to the SCDOT folks, they'll tell you that's a national standard for the sign design. And they did a study and identified 2,200 intersections statewide that had the highest collision rate, and that's why they did the sign installation. But you're going to see, I don't know if you've noticed, but the newest version of our street signs around town, they're larger and easier to read. And that's a national standard.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time, when we looked at these street signs, the standard they were going to invoke was going to cost us $150 for every street sign. Now, they backed off of that requirement. We're not spending $150. We've got a much more affordable sign than we're putting up. But it's an interesting thing.
Now, they only regulate state roads.
SCDOT.
Okay. All right, let's end this meeting. What do you say?
They are, but they have
now
to be
talk.
Spanish from the sign.
I did. There's a sign over there telling me.
you turn left on Fulberg off of Payne.
Thank you.
You got two.